Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are. Dan.
Hi, Jordan.
Dan.
Yes, sir.
Lionel.
Everyone. Lot of positive feedback on the Lionel theme song from last episode.
It's going to be in my head.
We might have peaked already in 2019 with the
with my dying breath after all memories have gone. I will say as my last words, Lionel.
Did not expect that sort of response from people, but I appreciate it. Everyone loved it.
You know,
that's great.
What amazed me is I hadn't already heard that song, right?
Yeah.
Like, it seems like that would have gone viral 20 years ago.
I don't know.
Not 20 years
not
ago.
Not with Lionel behind it.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying. Like, 5 years ago, some Twitter somebody would have, like, picked up on it, and it would have just spread like fire.
To be fair, I have no evidence it hasn't in some corner of the internet, but who knows?
Fair point.
Anyway,
it has in our corner.
Yes, certainly. It is now our marching theme, I guess. I don't know. But this is a podcast where I know a lot about Alex Jones and his associates' theme songs.
And I only know what you tell me and sing them till I die.
So, Jordan, today we got an interesting episode to go over. We have a modern-day adventure here. We're going to be going over January 2nd, 2019.
All right. It's time for the secret of 2019.
I believe Alex does tell a secret at the end of this episode that might plague his year. But we'll get to that when we get to it. Right. Last we checked in the present day, we covered Christmas Eve.
Yes.
We found Alex talking shit, saying that he told Roger Stone to get in touch with Julian Assange,
right,
and then drunkenly throwing a hatchet around his
right.
studio.
Right.
So that's
singing Christmas songs.
That's the energy he ended 2018 on, kind of.
Yep.
And now we'll see where he's at the beginning of 2019. But before we get to that, I'd like to take a moment to thank some folks who've signed up with the show and become policy wonks.
Hey!
So first of all, I'd like to say, Matthew, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you very much, Matthew.
Second, I'd like to say thank you to Sven. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Sven.
Thank you very much, Sven.
Next, I'd like to say thank you to Paul. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
Now, Patrick, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you very much, Patrick.
Next. Courtney, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you,
thank
Courtney.
You very much, Courtney.
Finally, what's up?
I was just wondering how many I kind of want us to suddenly, this entire episode is us just catching up with all the wonks.
We have a backlog, and I feel bad. We need to get through some of it, and I know everyone's itching for the longer drop. I understand it's sort of tradition, but sometimes we need to make our way through these people who we appreciate very much who donate on the standard level.
And, of course.
You know, I'm sorry you don't get to hear Alex say he doesn't want to hate black people. I'm sorry we don't get to hear him say that he renounces Jesus Christ.
Preemptive defensiveness.
That's the way it goes sometimes. And so finally, I'd like to say thank you to Ann Jeanette. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I hope Sven is from Sweden. And then we got Sonia and Sven, and we can get them together. Well, and they can...
Hey, now. Don't ship our listeners. But listen... I've gotten actually a number of messages from other people from Sweden.
Oh, okay, good.
So I know that even if Sven is an American or from some other country, we don't need him to be Swedish to enlarge our Swedish contingency.
What?
We're big.
I don't know
in
what
Sweden.
That means.
I don't know.
To enlarge our Swedish contingency.
We need to grow our Swedish ranks.
All right, Sven, Sonia, get on making babies. We need to grow our Swedish.
Hey, now stop it.
Yeah.
Stop trying to fantasy book the private lives of our listeners.
All right.
Also, if you are from Sweden, I'd like to know about Swedish fish. Are they really Swedish? Also.
You could just Google that.
I don't want to. If you would like to support the show and what we do and become a policy wonk, you can go to our website, knowledgefight.com, click that support the show button. It's all great.
Absolutely.
Some people may think that $2 a month or something like that isn't really a big deal, but it is.
Absolutely.
It feels like not a big deal a lot of the time for people who are the people donating that, because maybe it's not a big deal for them.
Right.
But when there are a lot of people come together and donate a little bit, it makes a massive difference, and we appreciate it so much. It's huge. I can live. So yeah, that's great. Yeah.
As we were talking about before the show, you have a introductory entry level, job now. And you only put in 70 to 80 hours of work.
Yeah. The hours are still a bit of a mess, but we're close to a basic entry level salary. So that's kind of nice. And it's mind blowing and yes. I appreciate it. Thank you also
Absolutely.
Very much. So Jordan today, this episode is fucked up, goes all over the place, but here is an out-of-context drop from today's show.
Let's just get down to business. We ain't making that money off that heroin.
What?
Do you want to?
I think he does.
is that saying we need to get into the InfoWars heroin game?
We need to start selling H. Yeah, Alex.
That would be a harsh turn for his pill business to take.
Not too dissimilar, probably.
Fair.
So today is, like I said, January 2nd, 2009. That's the Wednesday
2019.
Episode. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I'm stuck back in our investigation.
I keep writing 2009 on my checks.
I'm close to that just because of how much time I spent listening to his shit from 2009. But, I listened to the first because I thought, like, let's get this real New Year's energy going.
For sure.
And it is a boring, bullshit deconstruction of how afraid he is of China and of the 5G wireless technology.
Okay.
And we just did an episode where I went line by line taking apart his ideas about the FEMA camps.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, I want to do that about this 5G stuff.
Right.
But I know he's going to do it again and we can do it then.
Yeah,
too tired.
We got
I don't
time.
Want to do
we
it.
Got time.
I don't want to exhaust the listeners too, so.
We get it. Huawei. I understand.
Sure. I checked in on the second, and I found a more interesting Alex, who's jumping all over the place, hitting a lot of topics. And here's where we're going to start. And it's about how Muslims out of control.
My friends, it is January 2nd, 2019. 2019. I'm your host, Alex Jones. We'll be here for the next 4 hours. Paul Joseph Watson with big breaking news joins us at the bottom of the hour.
Doubt it.
Massive Islamic stabbings, shootings, bombings, firework attacks, rapes, all over Europe, celebrating the new year by burning down hundreds of cars per city. It has been quite the Islamic uprising that is just done as an exercise of dominance over the slaves. And so that is going to be coming up.
The slaves in this, if you're missing out on the context, the slaves are white people.
Oh, okay. All right.
If you're missing the sort of message he's trying to send, the slaves are the whites.
I gotcha.
The
gotcha.
Patriots, the
right,
nationalists, the people of the West.
Right.
So this is crazy. And I already really need to tell him to hold the brakes for a little bit.
Oh, yeah?
Because Alex is starting the year claiming that Muslims are terrorizing everyone. But there's a few things that he's intentionally forgetting to cover.
What's that?
Whether it's in his introduction or for the rest of the show.
The rise of white nationalist violence?
Well, for one, in Germany, a 50-year-old man was arrested after he drove his car through a group of immigrants shortly after midnight on New Year's in what is strongly suspected to be a far-right anti-immigrant attack. Included in the list of those injured by his attack were a 4-year-old boy and a 10-year-old girl. Though the man was of Turkish descent, he was a German citizen, and he was quoted as making several racist comments while being arrested. From an article in The Independent, quote, "The man had a clear intention to kill foreigners," Interior Minister for the state North Rhine-Westphalia, Herbert Ruhl, told German press agency DPA. That was a clear act of racism and xenophobia. But there was another car attack on New Year's Eve, this one in Tokyo. 21-year-old Katsuhiro Kasakabe drove his car through the narrow street leading to... I fucking forgot to write down the name of the shrine.
Oh.
It's one of those really important shrines in Tokyo.
There are a lot.
Yeah. He injured 9 people. This was an act of terrorism, but it wasn't Muslim, so Alex is not too concerned about it. Kusakabe declared that he had committed this act to protest the death penalty, and he refused to even defend his actions, essentially admitting that he knew he had done something horribly wrong in the name of protesting something he thought was way worse. Now, that's kind of interesting. It's a little bit interesting.
It's kind of ironic.
It merits covering, at very least. When you're going to go on this long jag about car attacks and Muslims stabbing people and stuff like that, that seems like this might be something relevant to fold into the conversation. Whether it be this German guy who went on an attack specifically trying to kill immigrants, or if it's this guy who's protesting the death penalty in Japan. Except the problem is that he wasn't a political terrorist protesting the death penalty in general. He was protesting the death penalty as it was specifically applied to members of the Aum cult, who were executed in July for their actions on March 20th, 1995. They were a doomsday cult who believed that they were the only people who were going to survive an impending global war.
Oh, I remember that.
And
yeah.
They were going to build a utopia called Shambhala after everybody else was killed by each other. But they weren't this kind of like, let's wait and let the war happen kind of cult. They were a let's also go kill people and see if we can help this war start kind of cult. In 1990, they fielded a number of candidates for office, but lost, which led them to blame a conspiracy by the Freemasons and Jews for their failure. In response, they began trying to harvest botulism toxin in order to prepare a chemical attack, which they intended to unleash on U.S. Army bases in Japan to trigger a war between Japan and the United States. This was unsuccessful because they did a really shitty job of harvesting the botulism. Their leader, Shoku Ashihara, was in a state of disorientation at this, or deterioration at this point, you know. He began to make his doomsday prophecies more specific, and he published a book called Declaring Myself the Christ. Interestingly, he began to outline who exactly the enemy was, and though he'd previously listed Freemasons and Jews, now he was warning of a conspiracy between those groups and the Dutch and British royal families, which sounds weirdly familiar to me. I don't know why. I can't think of why, but it seems, I feel like we've touched on this at least once, maybe once.
This is a racist thought, that I'm having. I feel like you can't be anti-Semitic if you're Japanese. Well, I feel like that's not allowed.
I feel like you are, you're on the wrong side of this.
How?
I don't like that thought.
I know! It's a weirdly racist thought.
They attempted a number of chemical and biological attacks in the intervening years, two of which were with anthrax. Luckily, the strains of anthrax they acquired were not ones that hurt people, so it was more or less the equivalent of stink bombs. They were responsible for at least 10 confirmed chemical weapons attacks between late 1993 and May 1995, but the one that got them in the most trouble was the one on March 20th, 1995. At the peak of morning rush hour, five members of the cult released sarin gas in the Tokyo subways, killing 12 people and severely injuring 50 more, some of whom died later due to complications from the attack. Surveys of the survivors found that many of them still suffer from PTSD, and 20% feel unsafe on public transit. 47 survivors have been certified as disabled due to the attack. The reason I lay all this out is because there's a bigger world out there that Alex wants no part in touching. The attack in Germany was clearly an anti-immigrant attack that falls directly in line with Alex's rhetoric. The attack in Japan was carried out by a young man who was protesting the death sentences of members of a doomsday cult that carried many of the same beliefs and enemies as Alex does. He can't wrestle with these ideas without pointing out substantial problems with his own message and how he chooses to deliver it. So instead, he aggressively stirs up hatred and fear of the vague Muslim attacks he sees happening everywhere.
Yeah.
It's very sad.
That is fascinating, though. And I realize I'm way wrong, because in the 60s, Yukio Mishima, the incredible novelist, he led a cult to the Prime Minister's house, broke in with samurai swords, and tried to install the emperor back as supreme leader in order to get rid of all of the foreigners who would ever come to Japan. Mm-hmm. So yeah, fair enough. This is kind of a later version of that.
I guess to some extent, yeah. So, I mean, my point here is that Alex is going to spend a good amount of time trying to stir up fear about Muslims throwing fireworks and stuff like that, when in reality, on New Year's Eve, we have a lot more to talk about if you want to look at, like, other events that have happened around the world that maybe are as important, more important, I don't know. I'm just saying, you're not looking at the big picture, Alex. You're looking at your narrative. Your editorial position is anti-Muslim, and therefore the only stories that you see fit to cover are these ones that you can integrate into that editorial position.
Right.
And I think it's lame, and when I first heard that, I was like, well, at least I'll get to, you know, learn a little bit more about this Japanese car attack and
right.
tell people about
cool.
it. But at the same time,
not
I was like,
cool, but you know.
I was like, this is probably going to be a pretty disappointing episode.
Right.
I was like, I kind of see where we're going. And he didn't disappoint as he starts to talk a little bit more about events in the new year.
We also have the good news. We have the new Brazilian president finally being sworn in.
That's not good
already
news.
Already making good on many of his promises out of the gates.
That's not good news.
Linking up with Trump and Putin and
That's
others.
That's worse news.
That they will not allow in public schools the pedophile agenda of sexualizing children, that they're putting in place their own Second Amendment. and doing a lot of other really exciting things like pulling out of the global carbon tax.
Whoopty shit. The idea of like, the getting their own Second Amendment and stuff like that, that's just concessions to arms, industries like that. So, I mean, that part you
ones that are not centered in Brazil, to be very clear.
No, but do have links to Bolsonaro.
Exactly.
So if I played Alex's game, I might just refer, to this NBC News headline. Quote, Brazil's Bolsonaro targets minorities on first day in office. But even that isn't enough to tell the full story. Jair Bolsonaro is a bit of a fascist monster.
No.
And as he took office, he showed that to the world, and anyone paying attention should be incredibly worried. Because Bolsonaro is very close with the oligarchs in the agribusiness world who are strongly against the idea of protecting land for indigenous populations, he transferred the responsibilities involving delineating what lands are protected from the Justice Ministry to the Agriculture Ministry, headed by someone who has a clear track record of opposing native communities' arguments on the subject. Instead of, protecting these places, Bolsonaro is moving forward with a program that is in the interest of enriching the agribusiness people while forcefully integrating the indigenous Quilombolas and the native Brazilians into his version of Brazilian society, in quotes. If this were being done to, I don't know, the Amish, Alex would absolutely flip out. And I don't need to just predict that he would. I've heard him constantly go on about how FDA regulations on Amish-sold cheese are an attack on their sovereignty. This is also a direct, you know, all this stuff is also a direct attack on environmentalism, but regardless of who's getting hurt, it's being done to help big business and will likely lead to the genocide of uncontacted tribes in the Amazon.
Yeah, isn't that, so many of them are literally uncontacted.
There are a bunch.
We're not supposed, we have a rule of don't fuck with these people. Like the one asshole who got shot with arrows.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to say murdered. Like, fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's on you, man.
That was a stand your ground situation.
Yeah.
As the right would like to call it.
Right.
But, like, even beyond all that, Bolsonaro also removed the LGBT community from the list of concerns and responsibilities of the Human Rights Ministry, a sign of really bad things to come. The new human rights minister is an evangelical preacher named Damaris Alves, who believes, quote, the Brazilian family is being threatened by diversity policies.
Oh, my fucking God. I hate these people.
Crackdowns on journalists are happening, and there's so much more here that is critically dangerous. We are going to watch the human rights disaster play out right in front of our eyes, and Alex is going to delight in it because behind the human suffering and terror, the stock market went up in Brazil when Bolsonaro came in. The wildly popular opponent Bolsonaro had jailed was a socialist. And Bolsonaro and Trump seem like friends.
Yeah,
and
Lebo.
Those three things are really all Alex needs in order to be like, this guy's great. Because Alex, much like Jair Bolsonaro, is a monster. These people are terrible people.
This is a really, really, really important track for Brazil to take because just 4 years ago, the right wing installed Temer, who is a right wing lunatic, who is barred from fucking running for the office that he was given. The Supreme Court justice, the Supreme Court that they have in Brazil is insanely hard right. And after all of that, they elected a fucking out and out fascist. This took 4 years.
Yep.
So in case anybody was worried that America is never going to descend into fascism, let's hold a pump the brakes there.
Mm-hmm.
All of this supported by the oligarchs who control most of the fucking media. So the
and make no mistake, supported by us.
Yeah, too. Absolutely.
Like there's U.S. backing involved too, and like so, hey, it's just all a complete mess. Like it is indicative of like, you know, things you need to look out for, things to keep an eye on, because it's going to get worse, and there's going to be humanitarian organizations that need support in order to mitigate the damage that's going to be caused to these communities, whether it be the LGBT folk in Brazil, whether it be these indigenous communities that he's seeking to basically destroy by way of claiming that they should integrate into society.
Yep.
Like, all that stuff. It's all...
Well, we've never seen a group of people claim that natives need to assimilate into society, leading ultimately to a massive genocide of them.
No.
That's crazy,
Dan. We don't have tons of case studies.
Where would we have interest in a fuck?
Yeah. So Alex is not off to a great start. I feel like he's revealing himself to not be a good analyst of the news, not a good compiler of the news, just pretty bad at
just
this.
Just a fascist.
And now in this next clip, he has some complaints about South Park, I think. And, then he teases some big news.
South Park's some pretty good comedy when they get down to brass tacks, and they would tackle anything. You know, they weren't scared of the Scientologists, you name it. But boy, have they been doing stuff on the modern political correctness? A little bit, but
I think they had multiple seasons dedicated to it.
Yes, entirely.
But they really should be tackling it more, but there's all of this intimidation. Now, when we come back, I've got something really big, something really, really big that I'm going to tell you about. Oh, and it's ominous. Storm clouds. We'll break it down when we come back in just 60 seconds. I'm Alex Jones, NewsWars.com. Tomorrow's news today.
So that is ominous as hell.
Yeah, that's very ominous.
And I'm going to be a little bit like Alex and say I'm not going to tell you at all what he's talking about. But I will say this. He used the term storm intentionally because this is trying to appeal to QAnon folks.
And
secondly,
I thought it was to appeal to Godspeed You Black Emperor fans.
No. Nor X-Men fans.
No, okay, fair enough.
This is going to culminate in Alex saying something that I do believe could have legal consequences. I think that he might be this is on par with him telling on air that he told Roger to contact Assange.
Yeah,
like
okay.
This is like Alex is getting real sloppy. Some of the stuff he ends up saying about this big story that he's got, I'm like, oh no, Alex, oh no.
I think he kind of wants to go to jail at this point, though, right?
I
he wants
know.
To go to jail or he wants to die, because where he's at right now, all he's got left is martyrdom.
I think he wants to get tried for something and win on free speech grounds.
Sure.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
I think he wants to insinuate himself deeply enough into something that's a huge crime, but fall back on, like, I was just saying things. I wasn't involved in it.
Or
something like that. I think he wants to do that so he can get caught up in the courts and, like, have his opportunity to grandstand and stuff like that.
Right.
He knows the track he's on now leads to diminishing returns. And his show just falling apart.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. I don't know, though. I think there is a chance that he really thinks, like, I'm not going to give too much away, but I think that what he's saying at the end of the show, he might actually believe is true.
Oh.
It's not.
That's not good.
It's not. But he might actually believe the stuff he's saying. We'll get to it. We can't get too into this without the actual content. So we'll get back to this in a minute.
Gotcha.
But just hold those thoughts in your head. So around Christmas time, Donald Trump made his first visit to the troops.
You'll
recall.
Oh, God.
Went over to...
He just visited the troops in Iraq without telling anybody in Iraq.
For security concerns or something.
You can't just... No, that's bad. That's bad.
You don't like it when people just don't call and show up at your house, that kind of thing?
I don't like that, especially not if they're a president and I am I'm a sovereign country.
It's weird.
There should be some diplomacy there. Otherwise, it's essentially saying we own your country.
A little bit. But that's not the concern that Alex wants to push back on, because I think there are a number of stories in the media about another problem with Trump's visit. And we'll get to those after Alex misunderstands those criticisms.
It is mind-blowing when I look at CNN or MSNBC or read the New York Times or any of it.
You can't
that it's total inversion of reality. And so often I don't even respond to it on air anymore because it's so brazen, it's so ridiculous, it's so insane. We all remember, and you can pull up the photos, of Obama going into war zones and some of the troops coming up and wanting him to sign his autograph. But the left spun it like it violated military code and they were all going to go to jail and people tried to find who the soldiers were and indeed get them in trouble. I call it the chicken SH, you know what, T dimension. That's a term I've coined. How do you get so low that you're trying to figure out the names of Marines and Army soldiers?
Kind of sounds like stuff you and your guys do all the time, but we have a way with words, the chicken SH, you know, T dimension. I mean, even if you say chicken shit dimension, that's still not a...
It still doesn't make any sense.
It's not a great gift of gab type, you know, like, I came up with that, I'm Gore Vidal in this bitch.
So do we all live in the chicken shit dimension?
You and I certainly do. According to Alex, yes, absolutely.
I'm glad they moved on from cuck. That's nice. It's good to know that they're going through the dictionary of C words to try and be dicks about.
I think they just realized we have too much fun saying it, and a lot of people on the left kind of enjoy it.
It is kind of fun.
And soy boy didn't quite work out either, so.
Why? Because it's terrible?
Chicken shit dimension.
How's chicken shit dimension going to go?
So far, it hasn't taken off.
It hasn't taken off? It's not viral?
No, the concern here is specifically that when Trump went over and visited these troops in Iraq, his people put out pictures and video of him taking pictures with soldiers and that sort of thing. And some of the soldiers who were captured in those pictures were members of like SEAL teams that you aren't supposed to know where they are.
Nah, come on. You know where they are. They're with the president.
Well, you're
they're
not,
always with
you're not supposed to know they're in Iraq.
Oh, that's probably bad, isn't it?
Their deployment is very secret
in
terms of where they are because they're very specialized teams and that sort of thing. So the issue isn't so much with like he put out pictures of himself with troops. Or no one really cares about that. In the past, presidents would have listened to their advisors and been careful enough not to be on camera, or if you are, keep it private. Keep it a private picture for that soldier or something like that. Don't release pictures of people who are in secret teams that then give people awareness of their whereabouts.
Bullshit. You remember whenever Obama leaked that picture with him and Hillary Clinton and they were in the Situation Room watching SEAL Team 6 kill Osama bin Laden?
Yeah,
they just revealed where SEAL Team 6 was, buddy.
In the Situation Room?
Yes, you got it. That one picture shows you that it was SEAL Team 6.
Remember that time Obama put out that video of him and Hillary peeing on Benghazi? I don't know.
I remember him releasing that video of him peeing on the Wailing Wall. That did not go over well.
This is all just shit. Alex is intentionally misunderstanding why people were concerned about this. And I don't know. I'm not a military guy, so I don't really fully understand how big of an infraction this is, but I read stuff on it enough to know that, like, it is.
Yeah.
This is a breach of protocol for sure.
For sure.
But I don't understand why the people there didn't stop him.
You know,
like, or, I don't know. I don't know who's to blame, but someone's to blame. I don't, in terms of things about Trump, I don't really care about this one particularly. And not because I don't think it could be severe, but because I don't fully understand it.
Right.
If I fully understood it, then I could talk about it more. I just err on the side of defaulting to people who know what they're talking
about. Right. Well, the simpler one is the first thing he started with a lot of soldiers were clamoring for Obama's autograph. Totally fine. However, campaign materials, not good.
That's a bad thing. Right.
That's against the rules.
It was gauche, though, of Obama to bring, like, Wheaties boxes with himself on autograph.
That's true.
A little bit tacky.
He did have
his rookie cards, like fake rookie cards for him to sign. Come on, man. You didn't play pro ball.
Come on. That first coin, bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
So, you know, that's not great. But it's just Alex misrepresenting stuff. You know, it's still kind of like we're getting into the show. He's still not coming with too much behind him.
And I don't want to denigrate the fantastic soldier. Blah, 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 go fuck off.
Right.
I just wonder, Dan, those soldiers, were they more excited to get a picture with Trump or with Obama?
I don't really care. That's a zero to me. I understand what you're saying, but I don't really care.
Yeah.
It's too much parsing. You know, like, it's just – and, like, they're – there's too many superfluous issues.
I know.
Like, you could go down the road of like, well, who cares about protecting these people who's like, oh, sure, it's a specialized job, but it's to kill people.
Right.
Or something like that. And like, yeah, but I just don't care.
Right.
Like, that's not that.
I can't have
that conversation.
My point is that it's really important that everybody be aware. And even the FBI released a report on this. A large amount of military and police personnel are white nationalists out and out.
There is an overlap.
That is true.
So, speaking of the military.
Yes.
Which Alex was, and we have since. He gets into complaining about Mitt Romney.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. This is
go for it.
Let him fight.
Yeah. You guys have fun.
Mitt Romney had some words about Trump withdrawing from Afghanistan.
Right.
And Alex.
Lazy, shitty, ineffectual, stupid words to make him look like he's a valuable critic of the president while at the same time supporting literally every fucking thing he does. Mitt Romney, you can go put your own fucking face on top of that shitty car instead of your dog. Let him drive it, you fucking garbage human being.
Yes,
anyways, continue,
it is
Dave.
Ineffectual criticism. Sorry. But Alex still is triggered by it because Daddy Trump is being criticized.
Of course.
And so he gets into talking about Afghanistan a little bit, and I think that he says some things that I take some strong issues with.
Okay.
China is already taking out up to $44 billion a year. $44 billion a year, you can look it up, of resources out of Afghanistan. Guess how much lithium for batteries. Guess how much cadmium. Guess how much of these hundreds of rare earth minerals that China controls 98% of globally, because we don't enter that market. So we basically stabilize the railways and stabilize the highways and stabilize it for the Chi-Coms, just like we always do. That's globalism. And Trump knows that. The minute we pull out of there, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda are going to start blowing the Chinese bases up. They already are. And that'll be their own problem.
Chinese bases.
But instead, we guard Afghanistan for the Chi-Coms.
That is weird.
That's a wild thing to say.
That is very weird. Because I've heard him make a lot of criticisms of the Chi-Coms and our various wars. I don't think I've heard him specifically be like, we should get out of there because then the Taliban and Al-Qaeda are going to blow up Chinese stuff. We're just there protecting the Chinese mineral interests or something like that. I don't think I've ever heard him say stuff like that before.
I don't think I've heard anybody say stuff like that before.
Which is profoundly weird. Also, I believe that the number is closer to 95% of the world's rare earth minerals are not controlled by China necessarily, but extracted by China.
Uh-huh.
They have a near monopoly on the industries that are capable of extracting rare earth minerals.
I did not know that.
In terms of their own, like, what's in China and what they have control of, it's a much lower number than that. It's a fine distinction. But yes, if they were to just stop, The world would have a problem.
They would be bummed out.
It would be a problem. But also, in terms of Afghanistan, it's never been a secret that Afghanistan is very mineral rich. 50-year-old Soviet documents lay out gold and copper deposits, and in 2010, a more formal survey found that, all things considered, there's likely $1 trillion worth of mineral resources in Afghanistan. By 2014, Afghanistan had signed a 30-year, $3 billion contract with a Chinese state-owned mining company for their giant copper deposit that they have. But it also awarded mining rights to their biggest iron deposits to Indian companies. I can find no evidence of Alex's $44 billion a year number. And honestly, considering that $1 trillion, that figure, that's not an annual figure. And the fact that China isn't the only country in play when it comes to strip mining Afghanistan, I find it very unlikely that that number is accurate.
Yeah.
I just can't believe that that's true. That being said, what's behind this shitty commentary is actually a very important geopolitical question, which is, what is the right thing to do in terms of Afghanistan? Obviously, as it stands now, since we can't rewrite the past, do nothing is a very bad answer. Because what would happen is most likely that the terrorists wouldn't just start working to impede China's mining operation. That's an absurd idea. The kind suggests that Alex thinks that the terrorists are on his side, which is hard to square with his constant rhetoric about how Obama and Hillary created all these terrorist groups, and they just do their bidding. I thought Hillary and Obama were in bed with China, so why would their terrorist armies attack Chinese interests if we withdrew from the country? It's all globalism up top for him. It doesn't make sense.
The whole terrorist being created by, that's in the past, Dan. We don't need to worry about that. I can change my position now because Obama and Hillary aren't there.
And also,
you don't fucking remember whenever I said it was their fault.
He says that they're their proxy armies
That was a while back. You can't expect
that
him
was
to
a
say,
week ago.
But that's a long time ago for him.
It's crazy because if his worldview is to be consistent, then up top is the globalists and they're controlling the Chi-Coms and Hillary and Obama and all these neocons and what have you, who are controlling, puppet mastering these terrorist groups.
Right.
So why would they have their tendrils attack each other? It makes no sense. Especially when the goal seems to be extracting minerals and making money off it. You would understand if they fought against each other for the appearance of something.
Right.
But when it detracts from what is ostensibly the main goal, your conspiracy no longer makes sense.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, here's what his worldview says is going on that he does not see as contradicting itself. The globalists control both the Chi-Coms and, through Obama and Hillary, the terrorists.
Well, maybe not just Obama and Hillary, but yes.
Yes. Yeah. All right. So Trump pulls out of Afghanistan.
Yes.
Assuming that the terrorists will attack the Chi-Coms, even though the terrorists are controlled by the globalists via proxy, and the Chi-Coms are controlled by the globalists entirely. And the goal would be...
I don't know. But, like,
oh, okay.
Legitimately, the most likely outcome if we were to withdraw and everything is not so much that these terrorist groups would then get China out of town or whatever.
Right.
But there is a decent chance that what they would do is start to take over some of these very lucrative mineral businesses.
Mm-hmm.
If they were to be able to get footholds into industries or parts of the government, you know, that sort of thing in a very corrupt system, they could end up enriching their terrorist organizations much more and thereby become a huge threat to their neighbors.
Yeah, they
like
don't...
That's the realistic outcome, unfortunately, of us withdrawing. Now, granted, there were better plans that could have been put in place to begin with.
No.
But...
Like what?
There's a number of them.
Yeah. So, but what would make more sense for them is not to destroy the strip mining operations, because they don't
take
know...
Take them over.
They don't know how to strip mine.
Right.
They don't even have engineers.
No,
engineers don't usually become terrorists.
It would be continue trying to take over power and then take over the contracts with the Chinese operations.
And then you make money.
China has a very specifically, like, non-moral foreign policy in terms of, like, especially economic
They
things.
Have a non-moral policy across the board.
Right. But they are totally fine doing business with regimes that are... perhaps against even their morals
yeah.
or morals of the world because there's
money's
just
money,
of,
baby.
Sure. But what China's doing and what they've been doing is employing a strategy of soft power in Afghanistan. They forgave the country's debts in 2004, and they're constantly working to ensure a relationship of friendship and cooperation. Many experts have noted that their strategy includes a belief that should the country be lifted out of abject poverty, many of the problems that precipitate terrorism would cease to exist. Whether or not their intentions are pure is a separate question. But I think it's safe to say that bombing people indiscriminately and killing civilians isn't a great approach, and it's the one that we've been using for a really long time. Of course, you have to worry about China's shitty human rights record and their oppressive government. But in terms of what they've have done in Afghanistan vis-a-vis investing in the natural resources there, it doesn't appear to be an evil plan. It seems like a better strategy because they aren't – I mean, I'm sure there's some exploitation involved. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, of course.
But what they're doing isn't necessarily stealing all of this stuff. There's a mutual.
They're paying for it.
There are contracts and stuff that they're putting in place where they're paying to take copper from the country, which in a like non-corrupt system that worked well.
Right.
What you would have is these businesses come in from out of the country, have arrangements, and based on the resources that are available in Afghanistan, they could end up becoming a very viable country.
Absolutely.
Like it could be a very stable, affluent country, quite frankly, based on what is there. But because of the sort of political situation and what has been done to it since
right.
time immemorial, it's not.
Okay, so you're saying that on the one hand we have America that has since 2003 killed millions upon millions of non-combatants.
Maybe not millions upon millions, but
well,
yeah, it's
and
up
not
there.
Even that, but you include sanctions, you include droughts, you include all of the damage that they've done to the economy in general, right? And then you have China that was like, you guys have a lot of valuable stuff. What if we paid you for it? And then when your people aren't pissed off and getting murdered all the time, you'll eventually have a thriving economy. Then you'll recognize that we were part of the partners from the very beginning.
And we forgave your debt in 2004,
yeah.
all this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, which one would you team up with, Dan?
I think that's a sounder strategy. Now, none of this is to say that I even fully understand all of China's operations. I could be talking out of my ass. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But just the broad picture of this is it seems like what we have here is Yeah, basically that.
Yeah.
And the other thing to be concerned about, too, is if you believe that China is some sort of a evil stealing all your stuff, Mr. Steal Your Stuff kind of operation, and they have all these, like, $44 billion that they're making a year in Afghanistan, if we pull out and the terrorists start attacking their interests, do you think they're just going to say, whoopsie-daisy, and run back to Beijing? They're not. Like, if that is what Alex believes is the case, then us withdrawing will only lead to China getting militarily involved in Afghanistan and probably killing tons and tons of people.
That doesn't make sense.
It doesn't, but I'm saying that if that's what Alex believes, that would probably be the natural. Because the other idea is give up this $44 billion a year they're making.
Well, I mean, but at the same time, China doesn't have a history of invading countries. And the only one right now that they're super interested in is Tibet.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure that everybody in Tibet knows that they're fucking Chinese and you better shut the goddamn hell up.
And there's other issues for why that is such a priority for them.
They don't have a long history of, and China, I would assume and I would hope and I would think that by now the global community would recognize that going to war in Afghanistan is a bad idea. We've got 4 different examples of people going to war and not winning and only making things fucking worse.
It's true. It's true. But I'm not saying that that is an outcome that's likely.
Yeah, no, of course not.
It's sort of implied by Alex's worldview on it.
It wouldn't happen no matter what.
No.
Yeah.
But, the reality on the ground is what it is. And Alex kind of just seems like he's talking shit, quite frankly.
He's talking shit.
I don't know. So anyway, we get to Alex teasing the big news. And even in this tease, I think Alex is stepping in a big old pile of shit.
Now, when we come back, the big news. I'm going to do it bottom of the hour. And Paul Watson joins us. And I'm going to cover it for about a half hour at the start of the next hour.
Not quite.
This is the big enchilada. There's more than one way to classify information. More than one way to declassify it. And if, as I predicted, you're going to start seeing very skilled hackers who already have the information, but they're going to parallel construct, release all the 9/11 poop on the Clintons because they're involved too, and the Bushes. So.
Sure.
You want to rock and roll, baby? You're going to rock and roll. The hackers have 18,000 pages of the stand down of 9/11. It's up on Infowars.com, and it's all about to be coming out. Let's stop right there. Guess what? The entire New York crime syndicate bipartisanly was involved in this. Trump wasn't involved. That's why the week it happened, he said there were bombs in the buildings, and there should be an investigation. Remember that? Called covering your bases. And that's a few of the little tricks. That's why Trump said, strap yourselves in. It's going to be a wild ride.
That strap yourself in, it's going to be a wild ride, is sort of hand in hand with Trump when he had that meeting with the generals, and he said this is the calm before the storm, which sort of kicked off in earnest the big QAnon, the storm meme online. all of that nonsense.
Okay.
So Alex is hearkening to that because he wants to reclaim QAnon. He wants to take over that space, much like he tried to do with Zach. But now he's doing it in a way of like, now I know this story is going to break what the real shit is.
Okay, so it's QAnon that are his, quote, hackers. And they are the ones releasing 18,000.
No, not so much. It's a little bit bigger than that, even, in terms of like. So there is a story that has come out about these hackers, and we'll get into it more when Alex starts to talk about it. But there's these hackers who have said that they have 18,000 pages of stuff that they hacked about the 9/11 insurance policies and legal cases that have come out of the insurance claims about 9/11.
Gotcha.
And they are implying that it's going to prove that 9/11 was planned. It was all an inside job.
Uh-huh.
And Alex is running with that. And there's some reasons he shouldn't run with that. But then secondly, in that clip, I think it makes perfectly clear that he's implying he has advanced knowledge of what's in those hacked documents, which no one should have because they're encrypted. No, like, there have been decryption keys that have been released for a couple of the documents in order to show, like, we have something.
Right.
But
I assume that the hackers got them legally, right?
No. But Alex also should have no information. And the fact that he's implying that he does is either an indication of being in touch with people who are committing crimes or him just lying. One of the two.
So we can
say it's one of the two.
I'm leaning towards lying right now.
Totally.
Your Cheshire Cat grin, however, suggests that you have some,
I'm not sure if I do, but once I don't know. I can't, even after we get to the end of this, I'm not entirely sure that I can land on one or the other.
Okay.
I just think that based on his actions later in this episode, it's going to be fucking hilarious to see how this plays out.
Okay.
Because it hasn't yet. As we're recording this, it hasn't yet.
Right.
I don't fucking know what's going to happen.
They haven't released the documents.
I believe that there probably aren't that many documents. I think it's probably wildly overblown.
18,000?
And I have certain reasons to believe that. But before we get to that, I just want to say that this is where the episode got interesting to me.
Okay.
Because, like, before this, it's kind of like, yeah, all right, this Afghanistan mineral stuff is stuff you touch on from time to time. It's kind of boring.
And, yeah, we know you're afraid of Muslims. If you're afraid of three girls in a pool supply shop,
fireworks are going to terrify you.
Yeah, we can extrapolate from there.
And he kind of does that every year these days. Like, around holidays, especially, like New Year's Eve or, I don't know, Bastille Day in France, you know, like, they're, you know, just like, oh my God, youths shooting fireworks.
Yeah, mostly Muslims and they're killing people. There's acid and cars and blah.
Right, so that's all kind of boring. But once he gets to, like, this is the big story, I kind of perked up a little bit and things are going to get real interesting. But before they do, Alex is mad at Chris Cuomo. Maybe not Chris Cuomo, Governor Cuomo. Remember that one?
Andrew Cuomo.
That's right.
Chris Cuomo?
I don't give a shit. He complains about Chris Cuomo all the time too.
All right, fine. I'm fine.
Mario.
All Cuomos are fine. Fair game to me.
Alex is not thrilled with him.
Yeah.
So, Cuomo gave a speech about, I don't even really know from the clips that Alex played. I don't really understand the full context of them.
Oh, the speech that Cuomo gave was, weird off, I assume he's talking about the radio interview that, no, he's talking about the speech.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would talk about the radio interview where he seemed to preemptively say like, hey, I mean, yeah, we have a far more democratic, situation there, but they're not going to investigate me. And if they do investigate me, they won't. Wait. Nobody said anybody was investigating you. Cuomo.
That's interesting.
Cuomo, you should not have.
That's interesting. That's not weird. What Alex talks about.
Okay, of course not.
Alex is talking about this speech that he gave near Ellis Island, where he was talking, I think the context that I can glean from it, and honestly, if I could do this all over again, I probably would have gone and listened to the whole speech so I could get some context.
Yeah.
But it's kind of one of those things you just dismiss. It seemed to be something about the idea of, like, Trump's relatives immigrated here and now he's the president, some sort of demonstrative thing about, like, immigration's great.
Yeah.
I guess.
That doesn't make sense.
I'm not entirely sure. But no matter the case, Alex is going to play a clip of Cuomo's speech. And then Alex says something that is crazy.
Okay.
Literally crazy.
This is the harbor where Frederick Trump arrived from Germany.
And that's why we're closing.
And whose grandson would become president of the United States?
The Governor Andrew Cuomo positioning himself as a
yes, and Fred Trump's father, Trump's grandfather, had to stay 3 months on Ellis Island in quarantine on record.
On record, you say? That's interesting.
Is that on record, Dan?
Oh, it's not.
Oh, wait, but I thought it was on record.
On October 19th, 1885, 16-year-old Frederick Trump arrived at Ellis Island. The thing is that Ellis Island, as we know it, the thing that we know about, the one where it was an immigration center run by the federal government, it didn't exist until January 1st, 1892, a good 7 years later. What Trump arrived at was known as Castle Garden Immigration Depot, which was run by the state of New York. The federal government had to take over the operation after a ton of incidents of unnecessary deaths, reports of state workers stealing indiscriminately from immigrants, and overall just outright corruption was found.
Gotcha.
Castle Garden was the first immigration facility in the United States, and between 1820 and 1892, an approximated 11 million immigrants arrived and became Americans. That's over 152,000 per year, or 418 per day. The story of Trump being quarantined for 3 months is categorically not true. Immigration records from that time are very precise, so we know exactly when he arrived. And Gwenda Blair's 2000 book, The Trumps, Three Generations That Built an Empire, explicitly lays out how mere hours after Frederick Trump arrived at Castle Garden, he met a German-speaking barber who was looking to hire an assistant, and that Frederick began working for him the next day and stayed for 6 years in his employment.
Wait, but then where did he get this three-month bullshit story from?
He made it up.
He just made it up?
He made it up. I mean,
he just flat-out made it up?
in the Ebola episode we went over from 2014, we heard him lie about Ellis Island and the idea that, you know, all these people were turned away because of sicknesses and stuff. And we've lost that because we want the sicknesses to come in. So this is really just trying to enrich his already existing false narrative of Ellis Island being exactly like our immigration. What he's doing is he's trying to apologize for detention centers.
Yeah.
Like, he's trying to present this idea of, like, you're mad that these kids are being held in camps, but in reality, they've been doing that this whole time, when that's not true. If you look at the history of Ellis Island, how few people were turned away and how quickly people got through and were just, now you're American.
Yeah.
You don't have a good case to make.
We changed your name, but now you're American.
Sure. You don't have a good case to make, though, if you look at the reality and you try and use that to indicate some sort of, like, it's always been this way about immigration.
Yeah.
You just don't.
But we're full now.
But if you create a false reality, you can make that argument. And that's what Alex is doing. And it serves his purposes on a second level, because then he turns it into, like, this Trump, his whole lineage has come from that really careful immigration proceedings and stuff like that.
Right.
Like, even the guy who's being a monster to Mexican immigrants and South American immigrants is, like, himself the product of the rigorous controls that they had to put in place. He's as much a victim as them.
He's trying to make them stronger, Dan, because they had to go through it, and now look, he's president. So all of you can be president someday.
If only we quarantine all of these immigrants for 3 months, there's a chance that their offspring will become president.
That sounds right.
Certainly.
I think all of their offspring will become president.
The point is, this story about Frederick Trump is 100% not true. It's very clearly on record. He got through immigration very quickly. And it wasn't Ellis Island. It was Castle Garden, because Ellis Island as an institution didn't exist at that time, which is a second point that I want to make about the idea of why federally run things are often needed. Because state-run things often have endemic corruption within them, as evidenced by Castle Gardens and the reason why Ellis Island had to be taken over by a federal organization.
But they elected Andrew Cuomo.
Wow.
What are you talking about? Corruption exists on the state level, Dan.
I mean, it's like 160, 70 years later or whatever. But
yeah. What are you talking about? Tammany Hall is an issue.
Point taken.
Wait, what kind of...
Right. So the state-federal friction there is just one other point I wanted to highlight. But the bigger point is, this story about Frederick Trump isn't true. And the only place he probably could be getting it from is maybe associates of Trump's or something like that.
Yeah.
Who are telling him these tall tales that absolutely don't match history.
No.
He's just making this stuff up. So then it becomes, like, this is just fun.
3 months on quarantine. I love how he's the grandfather came here too. And what the hell?
He was a Nazi, by the way.
They don't tell you. Yeah. And you get tested for diseases. Let's continue.
So, yeah, I mean, he even does that funny voice about Cuomo to try and, like, oh, isn't it stupid? Like, he had to go for quarantine for 3 months. You don't talk about that. But it's not true. So the voice you're doing is better directed at you, Alex.
Also, he doesn't talk about that because it's not true. It would be hard for him to. It would be hard for him to have talked about a lie that Alex Jones would come up after the time of his speech.
Yeah, it's
like, I'm sure if he had listened to Alex's talk, he would have added that into his speech.
Well, I also tried to track that down, possibly, about, like, trying to find possible sources of where that story could have come from, like the idea of Frederick Trump being quarantined and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, I expected maybe to find a blog or something like that, but I can't find any, like, backup.
Could he
that.
Be mixing him up with somebody?
It's possible. I mean, I don't exclude the possibility that someone was held for 3 months.
Yeah.
I do think that's possible. I think the.
Because he just came up with it so fast, you know? Like, he just
I think Roger told him or something like that.
Okay.
I think, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
But, like, sure. I imagine that in the course of the years that Ellis Island and Castle Garden were open and all that stuff, I'm certain that probably there were instances of people who were held for a really long time.
Yeah.
Like, that individual does exist.
Oh, of course.
The percentage of the people who are coming in who are held for any amount of time is very, very small. But yeah, that story probably exists, and maybe, I don't know, maybe Roger helped him conflate the two. But yeah, the bigger issue is just, it's not true.
What even diseases would they test for? It's in the 1890s. What testing procedures do they have?
They did have some, but a lot of them would have been more diagnostic tests. Like, it's not like blood work and stuff that takes months or anything. It would be like, Like prayer. We talked about, well, like we talked about on the Ellis Island episode, that eye condition that was indicative of a really contagious, thing.
Yeah.
That was like close to chlamydia. So like there were things that you could do visual tests on, like boils. If you have boils on your body.
No problem.
See, I mean, there's that sort of thing. That's the testing that they would do. And that's why
you don't need to want for 3 months. You could just look at them and be like, nope, fucking get out.
And that's why the process was so quick. Cause most of it was like a quick physical.
Yeah, exactly.
That you could do. Yeah.
You got legs? Get in there.
Anyway, do you know how to use them?
I forgot. I crawled off this fucking boat.
So it's all a lot of shit. And you know, it's just fun. It's nice to see Alex. But you know why? You know why it's fun for me? Because even that innocuous lie,
yeah,
that Frederick Trump was quarantined for 3 months at Ellis Island,
yeah,
is in service of white nationalism.
Yeah.
Like, even that seems so disconnected from Alex's sort of,
right,
like I said, the editorial position that he has is one of anti-Islam, and therefore all of the stories he wants to cover and chooses to cover are these instances of a Muslim running over someone with a car, as
right,
opposed to these other instances of people running over people with
right,
cars.
Right, right, right.
In the same way, this seems so outside of that editorial position. It just seems like Trump sycophant nonsense.
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
But in reality, it really does undercut like a dismissal of the concerns of immigrants who Alex classifies as all non-white,
right,
and therefore a scourge and a menace coming to America. Like
it's nice of him to exercise restraint on that instead of being like, well, of course they let Frederick through. He was white.
But I feel like that's underneath it.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Anyway, in this next clip.
If instead of None Dare Call It a Conspiracy, Alex had just watched Fievel, an American Tale, do you think we would be in an entirely different universe?
Possibly.
At the very least, he wouldn't be anti-Semitic or at least anti-mouse.
I tried to watch that not too long ago. It was crazy. It was, first of all, absolutely crazy. Like, just from a content standpoint?
Yeah, isn't it nuts?
And then second, from like you forget how rudimentary animation used to be.
Yeah,
kind of,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You see those animations and cartoons from like the, 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
And you have that in your head. And you have modern, like Toy Story 3
yeah,
and
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you forget that there's that weird middle ground of like that, like early 90s.
Oh, do you
late
mean the
80s,
fucking
early 90s.
Golden age?
It's pretty good, but it's also like, it's really weird to look at.
Yeah, no.
That was the experience I had.
I
anyway.
Watched Fievel Goes West not too long ago, and it's fantastic and also
nuts.
Distracting.
A lot of racial stereotypes flying around.
Which is really strange considering the first Fievel was essentially about Jews coming to America.
It's a mess.
And then they move west and they're like, let's be racist all day.
So let's not go too far down this critiquing of cartoons route. Let's get into this next clip where Alex hints at a story that he wants to cover because he's not getting to the big news yet.
Of course not.
He has another story he wants to talk about, and this one really interested me.
And Merkel says, yes, that's true. Last week, we're going to ignore national sovereignty and ignore the voters and have an EU army control you. And then quietly they arrest 200 officers of the German military because they were planning to overthrow Merkel for treason. Yeah, the Germans tried to overthrow Hitler, too. Wish they would have.
Okay.
So.
Okay. All right.
The clip that he's talking about, or the speech that Merkel gave, was about the idea of, like, in a larger world, sometimes states have to make, you know, compromises in terms of sovereignty. It could be described as giving up some of your sovereignty. It's not like saying the EU army is going to rule over you or anything like that.
Mm.
In much the same way as pretty much everything Alex lies about, there is like a kernel of truth in it that she was talking about compromises in terms of sovereignty.
Right. We're part of the EU, guys. Get used to it.
But at the same time, she was talking about how the parliament is the most important piece of these states and that you retain them and,
that sort
of thing. So like his argument falls flat. I tried to find this story, and I don't know what he's talking about. But I will say, number one, no one is interested in overthrowing Angela Merkel. She's already announced she's stepping down as chancellor, so no one who just doesn't like her is going to waste their resources on a very dangerous coup attempt. That would be nonsensical.
Now's a great time.
Bad time.
She hasn't stepped down yet.
Bad time to do it.
You know what? Maybe you just wanted to overthrow Merkel.
Well,
and you're like, until she's gonna leave soon, so we gotta get it in quick.
Let's play this out. Like, okay. I'm a group that, I'm gonna play both parts.
Okay, alright, then never mind. How about let's you play this
I'm
out?
I'm gonna be John Leguizamo and do a one-man show about
nice. This. Nice! Nice!
So I'm Angela Merkel, and I'm like, hi, I'm the Chancellor. And, this other group is like, we don't want you to be Chancellor anymore.
Cause you're like Hitler, apparently.
We're gonna overthrow you. We're gonna overthrow you because of your statements on sovereignty. And she's like, oh, a while back I already said that I'm gonna be gone in a bit. And that group's like, cool. That's how it would go. Like, if you are a group that wants to overthrow Angela Merkel for the things that she stands for and her being in power, then wait it out. You've got a month.
It's like a movie, Dan. You have to get, it might leave the theater next week. You gotta get it in quick.
But there's a chance it won't work. Like, if there's a chance you die on the way to the movie, maybe you wait for VOD.
There's always a chance you die on the way to the movie,
If there's a good chance, maybe you get it on Netflix.
There's a 70-30 chance you're going to die on the way to any movie.
So I can't find any indication of what Alex is talking about here. I can't find any articles on it, even on InfoWars' website. And any internet search fails to bring up any story that seems like he might be covering. There was one story I found that was about 200 German police officers.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't about them getting arrested. It was them being involved in a large mafia operation.
Right.
Like them breaking up a mafia ring.
Oh, okay.
And so it's like, oh, that's interesting, but it has nothing to do with Merkel, and the 200 officers weren't arrested. They were the ones doing the arresting. But that 200 number was in there.
Yeah.
So that was one possibility. I don't think that's it. However, back in October, a group of six men were arrested for forming a far-right terror cell called Revolution Chemnitz, which aspired to overthrow Angela Merkel. But they weren't doing it from, like, a she's a globalist and traitor position. They wanted to install a far-right ethno-state.
No!
The name Revolution Chemnitz is a reference to the city Chemnitz, a city that had been the scene of violent protests in the aftermath of a stabbing that was done by a migrant. The protests more or less deteriorated into mob violence, and Nazi salutes were being thrown around very liberally. Following these protests, members of Revolution Chemnitz began attacking immigrants with glass bottles and stun guns pretty regularly in what prosecutors have described as practice runs for their planned larger-scale attack to come. They planned an attack with assault rifles and high-grade weapons for October 3rd, the day when Germans celebrate the anniversary of the country's reunification. The message could not have been more clear that their primary terrorist motivation was to undo that that unification. The police had intercepted communications and had been watching the group, and when it became clear that this was their plan, they made their move and arrested the conspirators before they could murder tons of non-white people in the interest of pushing their goals.
Great.
These men weren't anti-globalization. They were literally members of the neo-Nazi scene in Germany, and it's easy to see where their motivations came from. And Alex seems to be defending them here, if this is the story he's talking about. It's the only people I can find who are arrested for trying to overthrow Angela Merkel in the last year, so that's, I'm guessing, what he's talking about. Maybe he misunderstands the story, maybe not.
I think that's kind of good.
I think
that's a reflection of a good job if only six people have been arrested for trying to overthrow you.
I think it was seven, but one of them got arrested previous to the six sting.
I got
because
you.
He beat up an immigrant, and then there's like, well, we're going to arrest you individually.
Yeah, because I think more people were arrested trying to assassinate and overthrow Obama in the United States than just six.
Oh, yeah, go find that list.
Yeah, it's a long list.
It's nuts how many people threatened to murder Obama.
Pool.
And it's nuts that we never really heard about it all that much, which I think is a sign of decorum.
Well, that's kind of more because the media was like, well, yeah, I mean, there's a black president. Of course people are going
to
do this.
I don't think that's it. I think it was seen as déclassé to talk about. I think it was seen as like, I would guess that Obama wouldn't want to give credence to like threats against him.
Yeah.
And people who were around him probably saw no benefit out of like publicizing them. Like, what do you do? Do you encourage more people to do this? Do you incite pity for him? What good is that? There's no positive outcome for it. So just don't talk about it. Quietly arrest these people, break up plots wherever you can, and just move on. Whereas now, anytime there's some sort of a minuscule threat against Trump, you got to hear about it.
Well, I mean, maybe instead what they should have done is installed one of those LED ticker tapes, and it just had a constantly updating list of
every death
threat. It's just the names just going alongside there. on a constant loop.
It'd be nice. Yeah. I'm certain that there are probably more people who conspired against Angela Merkel over the years, but this is the only thing I can come up with that seems to match Alex's story.
Yeah.
The numbers aren't right, but the themes are there.
Yeah.
And these are people who are neo-Nazis. These are Nazis, man. Like, straight up. It's not a stretch to say that. They are people who beat up immigrants and had plans
right.
to attack politicians and citizens with assault rifles on the celebration of Reunification Day in order yeah. to help bring in a white ethno state.
Yeah, they're even Germans. Like,
true.
They got all the trappings of a Nazi.
Throughout Nazi salutes all over the
yeah.
place. That sort of thing that Alex is defending them, like, it shouldn't surprise me, but somehow it still does. Like, if that's the story he's talking about, it's still crazy that he's whitewashing that. Because it's so easy to see what the reality
yeah.
is. It's just nuts.
I'm still kind of amazed that anybody becomes a Nazi. Like, I'm still kind of, like, we're so normalized to it now, but isn't it kind of weird that people still become Nazis? Especially in Germany. Like, to a certain extent, when, after the first World War, whenever everybody economically destroyed Germany and left everybody so fucked, you know, you're like, well, a nationalist far right movement is going to arise when everybody's
right.
that fucked.
Right.
But now everybody's doing so much better and there are still people trying to be Nazis?
Well, I think that you're looking at the wrong axis, the wrong variable there.
Right.
Because enough time has passed now and there's generational differences that there's probably a lot of people who have been taught that, like, doing Nazi salutes and doing any kind of thing that's adjacent to Nazism is absolutely forbidden. And
right.
in people who are like, you know,
there's
teens,
a certain oppositional defiance
sure.
necessary.
Do
yeah.
whatever is the most rebellious thing possible.
Right.
And
right, right.
like identifying with Nazis is the thing that their culture deems the most forbidden thing. There is good reason to think that a piece of rebellion could be dabbling in Nazi ideas.
Yeah.
Not to dismiss it or
right.
make it okay, but like,
right, right.
I think it's easier to become a Nazi in Germany than it is anywhere else because it is a place where they've dealt with that, that guilt
yeah.
for as long as they have.
Yeah, yeah. I saw an underground German bondage video that was actually just a guy putting on a Nazi uniform. So, you know, it's taboo.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how to talk about it more because I'm not German. But
right.
from things I've read, it seems like that sort of thing is in play. I don't know. I don't know what to tell
weird.
You. Yeah.
I guess you can – anybody can deny the Holocaust anywhere. It just seems strange to deny the Holocaust and say that that's like Nazis weren't bad, but at the same time actively try and kill people who are Jewish.
Or
like, aren't you?
Yeah.
Aren't you kind of just? Aren't you the very proof that the Holocaust did happen?
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I think people have a lot of blind spots.
Yeah.
That's
how we summate Nazis.
I honestly don't know how to, like, end that sort of line of thinking other than that. Like, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Probably they should see that, but
yeah.
I don't know.
It seems obvious, like, hey, you guys, there's six of you. You're trying to kill immigrants and Jewish
and
people.
And politicians in order to help put in your idea
right.
of a state that kills immigrants
right.
or excludes
right.
immigrants.
So that kind of would lead to a Holocaust considering, imagine, hey, six guys, imagine the entire country wanted to kill immigrants and Jews. You might wind up with a Holocaust. So maybe the Holocaust did happen.
Maybe. I don't know. Anyway. They have their position on immigrants. They have their position on minorities.
Right.
All that stuff. Alex has his. And in this next clip, he starts screaming about how the Muslims are winning.
Oh, boy.
Sadiq Khan said 2 years ago, when he first got elected the Islamic mayor of London, he said, just get used to it. It's normal. And you know what?
It is.
I can't keep track of the bus attacks, the car attacks, the knife attacks, the rape attacks, the firework attacks, the...
You don't want to keep track of them because you don't want to do any work. Because if you do,
right.
you have to then get into the ones that aren't Islam related
right.
or immigrant related or anything like that. Also, what Sadiq Khan was talking about wasn't the idea of like, get used to it, bitches, or something like that.
Which would have been a great speech.
He wasn't flexing on people like, Muslims are going to do this to you.
I kind of wish he did.
He was saying that in a modern society, sometimes there are risks. And some of these risks are... like, let's say the security apparatus that's in place can't catch everybody.
Right.
And it's a part of, like, large scale urban life.
Right.
We live in Chicago and there is a risk every time we walk down the street at night.
Yeah.
Or whatever. There's a chance that you might get mugged. I've had people, accost me. Now, thankfully, it's never led to a mugging, but like, I accept that as a possibility in a city.
Right.
That isn't to excuse mugging as a crime.
No.
It's to deal in a real way with, the world as it is.
Right.
And,
well, and the NRA's entire policy might as well be an organization saying, get used to it, mass shootings are fine.
Well, there's that too, and they also make money both ways on
exactly.
that one, because they try and make you as afraid of the, you know, just the realities of modern city
right.
life, but their answer is,
buy more guns.
Come to us.
Yeah, yeah.
Come to us for your, to protect you.
Yeah, so, the NRA makes a lot more money on the day after a mass shooting.
You bet.
So they kind of have a financial incentive for mass shootings to continue.
Well, but that, see, I agree with you, but the only reason I don't like that is because it seems to, put actual guilt on them as opposed to, abstract guilt, which I don't care.
Let's yeah, not, yeah, let's not move into it. Let's not do that.
So this clip isn't done.
The hand grenade attacks and the mass raping and grooming and government allowing it. I can't even keep track anymore. I'm just becoming numb to it. They're winning. Paul lives in London, Stan. We'll talk to him in one moment. But first, all the big specials are going to be over today.
No!
Boo!
No!
Boo!
No!
Boo.
Another reason he can't keep track of it is because he would also have to keep track of how many of these incidents happened under Boris Johnson and all of these things in order to compare.
Well, he doesn't want any statistical work. He doesn't want any work. He doesn't want to do any work.
Absolutely.
That's fine. Because even in this, he's not talking about any specific incidents. He just keeps talking about the myriad knife attacks.
Can't keep track of them.
And every time that we've delved into those waters and talked about like how he always screams about how there's all these acid attacks, and we go over the statistics and talk about like the reality of like who are the people who are doing these acid attacks, why
right.
are they doing them, all
right.
that stuff, it never matches his narrative. He never wants to get into the reality and the individual instances because it's a problem for him.
Reality really fucks up his narrative.
He just wants to yell about these things in a vague sense in order to make you scared of the idea that the Muslims are winning and that Paul lives in London, Stan.
He does.
The specials are still going.
It's strange that all of his specials assuage fears. Mm. And then he spends all of his time making people afraid.
I mean, it's this, like, you just, it's such a pathetic business model, and we talk about it all the time, like, obliquely, but, like, it is just, like, it's a strategy that he learned in the 90s working for Ted Anderson as a gold
right.
salesman.
Right.
Where you create this fear of a financial collapse, and then Ted comes in and tells them about the gold that will save them.
Right.
Like, it doesn't work on a one-to-one level because he's making people afraid of Muslims winning. And then selling them pills or something?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Fair.
But he's been able to maneuver this from that, like, I have Ted who's selling you the thing that saves you from what I'm making you afraid of.
Right.
And now he's pivoted it to, it doesn't matter what he's selling. It's that if you buy things from me, I will continue to exist. And I'm the one who's saving
yeah,
you from
yeah,
this.
Yeah, yeah,
it's a really pathetic business model and really manipulative and ugly, no matter what he's selling.
Right.
If he's selling the best thing in the world, if he's selling Wonka bars, one of my favorite candy bars, it's still a bad business model.
No, Dan, I'm just saying, all I'm trying to say is that the far right is taking over in the United States. Nazism is on the rise. Hate crimes are going out of control. And Dan, we have t-shirts that you need to buy.
We don't have t-shirts.
We don't have t-shirts. We're bad at this.
So in this next clip, Alex wants to talk more about the Muslims that are taking over and about some of their New Year's Eve activities
right.
and stuff. And when we get through this clip, you will see that this is bullshit.
99 burned cars in one town, burning buildings.
99 burned cars on the wall.
No!
Buildings. I mean, it's, I can't even keep track of this. We can't as a news organization even keep track of how insane it is. There
no,
it is.
Could.
99 vehicles set on fire in migrant heavy Paris suburb and on New Year's Eve. And here's the key. This is just like any Islamic country. They don't let you come in the country if you're Christian or an outside group, or a woman not wearing a veil. And then they congregate in cities and take them over every single time. This is meant to drive you out, drive down property rates, so they get control. It's a mafia tactic. It's cancer is what it is. Stay with us.
Gross.
Was it's one of the cancer. Mafia's tactics reverse gentrification?
I guess. I don't know. It's cancer. These non-whites making the neighborhoods is a cancer. So there's this story about these burning cars on New Year's Eve. 99 burned cars in a city in France, which Alex earlier said per city. It's like, which implies it's every city. I don't know about that. So just for fun, because Alex is talking about car burnings and I want to illustrate how easy it is to take any headline or story and use it however you want, I present you with this news story out of Goldsboro, North Carolina from January 2nd, 2019. Quote, police are investigating what appears to be a hate crime after a Goldsboro, North Carolina family's SUV was set on fire because their daughter, who is white, was dating an African-American teenager.
Oh, come on.
The girl's mother said that while the family slept, two of their cars were covered with swastikas and racist language, and a third car was set on fire. In the aftermath, the daughter had to stay with family out of state, and the family had to wrestle with the idea that their child was unsafe because she decided to date outside her race. Go ahead, look into recent arsons in the United States. There's plenty of them. There's Victor Nelson Rosado, who was arrested on December 30th in Midland, Texas, right in Alex's backyard, because he set a woman's house on fire. Interestingly, he was also charged with felony stalking, something he'd been arrested for twice and charged for twice in the past. The woman who owned the property told officers that Rosado had previously slashed her car tires and vandalized her vehicles and home. Or how about Loretta Bailey from Manchester, Pennsylvania, whose ex-boyfriend was arrested for burning down her house right after she had broken up with him.
Violence against women!
He started out small, just vandalizing her truck on Thanksgiving, which led to her attempting to get a protective order against him. Ultimately, this didn't work out because he just kept avoiding the officers who were trying to serve him with papers, and then he burned down her house. Or there's this guy in Hialeah, Florida, who committed suicide on New Year's Day 2019, but was sure to set his house on fire before he did. You see, his girlfriend had recently separated from him, but she didn't feel safe going to retrieve her possessions from his house alone, so she called the police to escort her over there, which led to them contacting the ex-boyfriend to make sure he knew what the situation was and everything went smoothly. After getting this update that the police and her were coming to get her possessions, he set his house and car on fire to make sure that she couldn't reclaim her possessions. Then there was Nicholas Cole, the 20-year-old guy from Albany, New York, who set someone's car on fire on New Year's Eve after getting into an unspecified dispute with them. Or there's George Husky of York, South Carolina, who was due to turn himself in to begin serving a 90-day sentence he'd received for a domestic violence charge, as well as a charge for illegally carrying a pistol. Before he went to turn himself in, he decided to enjoy his freedom one last time by burning down someone's house with them inside it. They survived.
Oh, that's really,
yeah.
I needed that yeah. so bad.
Yeah.
After that list.
Yeah. Point is, these are just some of the arson-related incidents that have happened in the United States in the last few days. A whole lot of them involve domestic violence, which, as you already pointed out, is strange. Real strange.
It's kind of a pattern.
Seems like it. A further point is that, yes, there were 99 vehicles set on fire in France. But the way Alex is reporting the story is intentionally racist. His headline on InfoWars is 99 vehicles set on fire in migrant-heavy Paris suburb, which is meant to imply that the migrants are committing this mass fire as some sort of a terrorist act.
Of course.
Because why else would you say migrant-heavy suburb unless you were trying to make someone afraid that they're going to come burn your car?
It's just information that's out there, Dan. I mean, you look to yourself to figure out whether it's relevant. It's just information that's out there.
The story goes even further to make things explicit, saying this, quote, is a perfect illustration of how mass migration and integration has completely failed.
Oh, boy.
That's a fucked up sentence.
That's a fucked up sentence.
There's no primary sourcing in this article, only a tweet from an account called The Intelligence Fusion, which states that 99 cars were set on fire, a fact that Paul Joseph Watson then goes on to editorialize about and connect to stories he's just decided are connected. So this entire article, the only primary source about the 99 cars is this tweet from The Intelligence Fusion.
3 million illegal immigrants voted in the last election day.
Now, I don't know a whole lot about The Intelligence Fusion, but I glanced over their Twitter feed, and it seems like maybe people who are doing some work, like it seems like they're doing something.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about them to to give any kind of decision on them or anything like that. But looking over their account showed me a few stories they've covered that Alex and PJW certainly aren't getting near. From January 3rd, 2019, quote, earlier this week, flyers were placed on vehicles in central Ferndale, Michigan by a white supremacist group. Flyers had messages regarding the need to, quote, take back America. Or there was a tweet from January 2nd, 2019, quote, in 2018, Chicago saw a drop in murders for the second year in a row, with 100 fewer murders than 2017. Police credit investments in data-driven policing and the creation of strategic decision support centers for the drop. Oh, Alex, do you want to talk about how, oh, things are getting better in Chicago?
Nope, nope. We need the National Guard in there, Dan. Chirac.
Right.
Chirac, Dan.
I have no idea what the Intelligence Fusion's editorial position, but nothing, what it is, I have no idea.
Yeah.
And I don't know how, like, stringent they are with, guidelines. I don't know. It would take way too long to figure that out, and there's such a tertiary piece of the story that I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
The point is they're the only source of actual primary information in Paul Joseph Watson's story. Now, Breitbart did cover this story, too, and to their credit, they at least did link through to one actual French source, Le Parisien, which includes the line, quote, in the lot, some vehicles were most likely burned for insurance scam attempts. This is something that comes up over and over again from experts when we look into the issue of vehicle burnings in Europe in particular. The vast majority of them are the result of insurance scams. Alex has every reason to know this, but still perpetuates the idea that this is the work of some sort of group of Muslim immigrants trying to terrorize the public, which there's no evidence to support, even on Alex's own website. This is a pure expression of Infowars' editorial position of demonizing immigrants, Muslims, and of supporting white nationalism. This is a zero.
You know what I just thought of the way Alex put that earlier, where he's like, these immigrants come in, they lower property values so they can take over. What he's actually just said is, I know the racism of property values in that just anyone being non-white there lowers property values. Doesn't matter if their house is the same or different.
Man.
It's just by virtue of being non-white, it lowers property values. Alex, you understand how racism works. You got it.
You have what it takes to be woke.
You did it. You did it, buddy.
That is interesting.
Let's start talking redlining, baby. We've got it all.
That's such a buried piece of, like, what he's indicating he is aware of. That is really interesting. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's so subtle
that I didn't even pick up on that.
He gets it. No, yeah. I was thinking about it. I was like, wait, did you just get that right?
And he doesn't seem to think that that's a problem. He doesn't seem to think that that's a function of systematic racism and a corrupt real estate industry. But
what a fucking asshole.
Yeah, he's dumb. But here is him being even more assholish. Like this, I bet there was more before the feeds cut in, because it starts very curiously as he's coming back from break.
Of course, mommy's going to help cut your testicles off. Oh, it's so liberal to brainwash your five-year-old and tell them they're a girl or they're a boy.
Those aren't the lyrics to that song.
It's so liberal. All right, let's get serious. Final segment.
The lyrics are Lionel.
Holy shit. I don't know. Understand. Like, I want to be clear. Before this, he wasn't talking about, like, trans issues, like, anti-trans issues. He doesn't after this. He's just the spirits getting in him, and he does a transphobic song parody in the middle of the show.
Yeah.
I don't know why it must have been an off-air conversation that he was having or something like that. It got into his head, and it bled into the show. It's so weird.
Buckley, we went to break, right? Buckley, you hate trans people? Me too. All right, I'm going to sing a song about it. Everybody play that.
It's such an interesting stray bigotry that, like, doesn't connect to anything he covers in the episode. So you should know that there is that big news, and it's about these 9/11 hacked documents. It's coming.
Yeah.
But before it comes, Alex has got to throw one of his longtime associates straight under the bus.
But I've got, when I say huge news, intergalactic-level Gigantor coming up next segment. And then Roger Stone has huge news. I hate to have to go after Dr. Jerome Corsi, but there's some chicanery going on, so we're going to do it.
Alex is siding with Roger in the Roger Stone versus Jerome Corsi battle.
Jesus.
So for anyone who doesn't know, I don't know if we've covered it on the show or anything like this, but Jerome Corsi has, he's been talking to Mueller, And then it also turns out that he's mad about this, so he's decided he's going to sue Mueller. And
how's that lawsuit going?
Can't tell. Probably not great. Roger Stone initially was very supportive of Jerome Corsi, but now apparently there's been some backstage beef, and the two of them are feuding. Roger, because he has no other social media, put up on Instagram a really ugly picture of Jerome Corsi, and this thing about how he's a snake in the grass. And
okay.
He's working with Mueller to sandbag Roger Stone, and he's
Was it a selfie with him and Jerome Corsi?
It wasn't. It was just a picture of Corsi in his, makeshift study. I don't care. I really don't care. I don't think it's, I honestly don't even know if it's real. Like, Jerome, like, I don't.
You think they might be doing a professional wrestling beef?
Possibly.
In order to both distance each other from each other, so whenever they're being investigated, they.
I mean, if you look at how Roger left the Trump campaign with the idea of him saying that he quit and Trump saying he got fired.
Right.
In order to create the appearance that they weren't working on the same page.
That there was a schism.
Yeah, that sort of thing. I think if you look at Roger's career, there's a lot of fake, publicity.
Yeah.
Moves or whatever. I don't really care. All this is a zero to me because Jerome Corsi is still Jerome Corsi. Roger Stone is still Roger Stone and Alex Jones is still Alex Jones.
So
I don't give a fuck if they don't like each other.
Are you team Roger or team Corsi?
Neither.
Come on. You got to pick. Hey, this is Twilight all over again, man.
No.
We have a strange.
I'm rooting for them both to go to prison.
We have a strange romantic, triangle here. I assume that Alex is,
He's Bella, Team Roger.
Or whatever.
He's Team Roger 100%.
Oh, see, there you go.
He's indicated there. He's throwing Corsi out, man. He's throwing him the fuck out.
But that's why she didn't wind up being with the werewolf. In this situation, Jerome Corsi is the werewolf kid.
Well,
I'm gonna do Twilight references for the rest of the night. I'm holding myself to it.
I mean, I've never seen Twilight, but it's my understanding that the werewolf was more nurturing. Or like was a better guy.
I think he was.
I think that was the story.
I think the vampire was just an asshole.
Let's deconstruct Twilight having neither of us seen it. It's my understanding that the werewolf was her age and a decent guy.
Yes.
And then the vampire was a thousand years old and a creep.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
statutory rape at best,
you bet
right?
It is.
She was 16 and he was 1,000.
So Alex being Bella, and Corsi being the werewolf, and Roger being the vampire is possibly
that
accurate.
That might be, that
based
might actually
on our
make
never
sense.
Seeing Twilight, that is a completely accurate metaphor. Don't come at me. I just don't care. It could be a fake beef. It could be real. I'm not charmed by this. I'm not interested.
No.
Although I am slightly interested in the idea that, whatever the situation is, Alex has decided to be like, I'm doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on Roger.
Right.
I'm with him
no matter
what. It doesn't fucking matter.
Who wins a boxing match between Corsi and Stone?
Stone.
They're both old.
Stone.
You think so?
Look,
you think Corsi's just too slow?
He can't move, man.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, okay.
He's a big pile of goo,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, but he's probably got a hard right, man. And
no.
Stone can't punch for shit.
But Stone is quick. He's quick on his feet. And look,
he is a rat.
Here's the deal.
He is a rat fuck.
Jerome Corsi is one of those guys that if he hits you, you're out.
Yeah, yeah.
He's
late period George Foreman. He can't move, but he's still got, you never lose the right.
He's a guy also who has a lot of endurance in the ring. You could punch him 30 times and it counts for one or whatever. But I think Roger has the stick and move. I think he has the stick and move.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
He's quick enough that he could rope a dope.
He's got Corsi. He's got the Ali. He's got some Floyd Mayweather defense levels.
I would take Corsi to lose every time.
Okay.
Every time. I just don't care. Although this is interesting to me on another level, and that is when Steve Pachenik started talking about how the Vegas attack was fake.
Yeah.
Alex threw him under the bus and was like, I think he's still doing CIA operations and stuff like that.
When was the last time we saw Pachenik?
I haven't seen him in a very long time.
Oh, man.
But he never questioned what are the other things that Pachenik has told me in the past.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. He just was like, all right, we're not going to work with him in the future.
This one time he's a CIA operative, but at the same time, literally everything he said before this moment is still valid and perfect
part
for
of my
narratives.
View.
Yeah.
Alex is now throwing Corsi out and being like, Corsi's a weasel. He's trying to get Roger thrown in prison, all this stuff. And at no point is he going to do the work of being like, I've used him a lot. Like, of course, he used to work for WorldNet Daily. I've been using him as a source and interviewing
before he
him
for me.
years and years.
Yeah.
Like, he's a huge part of a lot of my fears about Obama and
right.
all this stuff.
Right.
It's crazy that he doesn't consider, like, oh, this guy is now trying to get one of my best friends thrown in prison. Maybe he's been a bad dude before this.
Oh, he doesn't
care at all about that because he doesn't.
Yeah, I've never considered this. Whenever Jakari...
Sorry, hold on real quick.
Yeah.
It's an indication that they all know they're playing a con.
Yeah. No, absolutely. 100% I agree with
you. If they thought any of this was real, it would be like, we need to start analyzing what toxic information this now toxic person brought into my world.
Yeah.
And he never does that.
Just like with a cop being dirty for one investigation, every investigation that cop has ever done then comes into question.
You gotta
review. Absolutely. What I never thought about, is like with Jakari Jackson, he quit, right?
Yeah.
Because fuck InfoWars. I don't want to be the token black guy there.
I'm not sure that was it. It seems like from everything I can tell, he had just a problem with the editorial shift that was happening.
Right. Well, and if it were now, it would be. Mm. But I never considered how it must feel to be fired for being too crazy for InfoWars. Like, Pechenik is literally no longer a guest. He's fired because InfoWars was like, you're nuts.
Because he wasn't fired even. After Alex stopped talking to him, he would still show up on David Knight's show and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
He just goes to the junior varsity roster.
I didn't know that.
You don't get Alex's publicity promotion or whatever. Like, you don't get that reach, but you can still have access to David Knight, or maybe you'll show up on the War Room.
Fucking everybody has access to David Knight. He needs anything.
It seems like Leo Zagami is still like a regular guest on Owen Schroyer's show and stuff like that. So it's like, yeah, you keep them in the, like, sort of the baby kennels.
Right.
And stuff like that. It's like, yeah, you can't have access to the show that people actually listen to.
Right.
But you can come, we still want whatever. This is indication to me, and this is irresponsible of me, but it smells like pay for play. Because otherwise, don't talk to them. If you don't trust them, don't let them on any of your shows.
Right.
Instead of like, let's take a little bit less money from them to appear on this show or whatever. It seems like that.
I bet we could get on Owen Troyer's show.
Yeah, it would be combative, but I wouldn't want to do it. But yeah, probably.
No, of course not. I don't want to talk to that motherfucker, but I bet we could do it.
The right email could probably get us in there. But anyway.
Hey, Owen, we're free.
We have some interesting thoughts on globalists. So in that last clip, Alex indicated that he's turning on Jerome Corsi. And then in this next clip, he makes it pretty clear.
Chicanery.
All right. We're well into the second hour of the first live show I've done of 2019. It is.
That's news to me. I actually didn't realize he said that, which means that the episode that I was starting to listen to on the first, where he's going over 5G, was a clip show. And that makes me feel confused. Here's two things. One, I'm glad we didn't go over it.
Could have been pre-recorded.
Yeah, that's possible.
Yeah.
Whatever the case, it's weird I couldn't tell. It doesn't speak highly of his content.
No.
It's January 2nd, 2019. I'm your host, Alex Jones.
Everyone
knows that I'm not an infighter.
Nope.
Guess you
I
are.
Don't go after other talk show hosts or other media
people
that are patrons.
Michael Savage?
Everyone.
And try to hurt them.
Sean Hannity?
Unless I know they're full of crap.
Bill O'Reilly? Who else you got?
I've been interviewing Dr. Jerome Corsi.
That's true. He does love ManCow. Fuck ManCow, by the way.
At least 16, 17 years, and he's a smart guy.
Is he?
Three times he's had number one New York Times bestsellers.
About Obama's birth certificate being fake and John Kerry Swift boating.
Bought by the Koch brothers.
And he's put out a lot of accurate information. I don't have people on that are involved in disinfo.
Yeah, you do. We have to pause there. Because Jerome Corsi on the show has specifically talked about how he was trained by Edward Bernays.
Yeah.
So you have this guy who is a trained propagandist. Edward Bernays put out a book called Propaganda that describes the process of it and his whole career. We went over that long ago. But Alex,
that was a good episode.
Go fuck yourself with the idea of I don't have people on who are in misinformation. Steve Pachenik, before you threw him off the show, you'd always talk about how he's a psyop guy.
Yeah.
He's in information
Never
warfare.
Never involved with disinfo. No. The strongest information is the truth, Dan.
Right.
That's why the media is always saying, Jones admits he's an actor. Everywhere. Just
that was your lawyer.
Thousands and thousands of publications over the years. Every major news show has said it. Do they show a clip of me saying it?
No, because he's your lawyer.
Because they know absolutely well that I try to tell the truth. And I get things accurate probably more often than anybody else.
Nope.
It's really funny to hear that halfway through this episode. When he said that Trump's dad was quarantined for 3 months on record at Ellis Island.
There's, don't follow up.
There's three factual
don't
problems even with that sentence.
Don't look into it.
Who cares?
100 cars per city in France got burned in the past
per
2 days.
City.
Per city.
So,
name a city in France.
Again, I got,
100 cars.
Lyon.
100 cars burned.
Alsace-Lorraine. No, that's a region.
100 cars burned.
Look, who gives a shit? Alex is stupid. He's thrown Corsi under the bus. It's gonna be, it's non-binding though. Much like Agenda 21. It's non-binding.
They'll be back on shorts.
Yeah, this is nonsense. Yeah. I don't care. This would be like, if we got into this and we're like, look at this, Roger and Corsi are fighting, this means something. That would be kind of the equivalent of Alex getting into palace intrigue of the Trump administration
talking about
how, like, we got to get Kushner out of there. He's an evil influence. Like, who gives a shit? All these people are liars. It doesn't matter if they're fighting with each other or working together. It doesn't fucking matter. Who gives a shit? The only possibility that I see as being interesting from this, and I see no indication of this being forthcoming, is that as they start to fight with each other, one of them could reveal something accidentally.
Yeah.
Like the idea of what they were doing in the lead up to the 2016 election. Like that idea, like these people who were clearly coordinating with each other in some way, like letting slip something. That's the only thing I find interesting, and as of yet, I haven't seen that. But if
so, we're talking about the prisoner's dilemma as being a possibility here.
Yeah.
We could be in that situation.
Yeah, there's a possibility
for sure.
That someone against their own interest reveals something they shouldn't.
Right.
I don't see that. So at this point, this is a zero to me, and both of them go fuck themselves.
Right, because Roger Stone and Jerome Corsi are both well familiar with game theory and have decided that the best way for both of them to win is for them to cooperate.
With a public appearance of a fight.
Exactly.
Probably.
Yeah.
I think that that's entirely possible. It may not be. I don't know. But, like, the biggest thing I can say is, again, I don't care.
Right.
I don't give a shit.
Right. What are they fighting with? Is it like, you're lying? No, you're lying.
No, I don't think so. It's more of a, so Roger's allegation is that Jerome Corsi was willing to lie about Roger, but not about himself. With the special counsel investigation.
Okay.
So I don't know how he knows that now or what he's basing that on. I have no idea.
The documents are public.
But I do know that there are texts that have come out between Roger and emails between Roger and Corsi about, like, we need to get Ted Malik to go talk to our friend at the Ecuadorian embassy and stuff like that. You know, like, there is coordination between the two of them in the relevant time frame of the WikiLeaks releases and stuff like that.
Yeah,
there is something there. Because we don't have all the information, we don't know what it is, and it would be stupid for us to speculate. But, like, they were up
to... It could have been anybody in that Ecuadorian embassy, Dan.
Totally. They were up to something. It's unclear what it is. It doesn't really matter. We know that Alex has taken responsibility for telling Roger to coordinate with Julian Assange or get him Julian Assange.
And now, knowing that Jerome Corsi was also coordinating with Roger at the same time, who is also an employee of InfoWars
at
the same time.
And it's around when Jerome Corsi became an actual employee of InfoWars as the Washington Bureau Chief. When Alex was pretending he was going to start a Washington branch of InfoWars, There is a lot of stuff that, like, sort of disconnected pieces and stuff like that. But, like, for us to try and put it into, like, a harmonious whole would require us to make too many leaps that we can't make. There's something going on, but who knows what it is. Could be that Roger and Corsi were conspiring to fuck with Alex. That's entirely possible.
That'd be hilarious.
Like,
that would be the greatest.
It's possible
joke.
That the two of them were incapable of getting in touch with Assange or something like that. Look, who knows? Like I said, I'm going to double down on this. Irresponsible to speculate too much, so let's just stick with what we know.
Affair.
We know that Alex has a lot of information.
True.
And a big news story.
And is always correct, or at least way more than everybody else.
Pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
And this big news story is about to break right now.
I've got a story so big here that, A, I have to be careful about what I say.
For sure.
Generally should be.
Which you're not going to be.
And B, this is the incredible, when I say incredible, I mean super incredible world we live in where things are so volatile.
Summer rage!
And it's the type of stuff that got Andrew Breitbart killed.
Whoa!
A heart attack.
So I will be judicious.
Polonia?
And I will cover the story when we go to the next break and come back.
You son of a bitch, teasing it again. But he's already said what the story was. He already talked about the idea that these hackers have these documents about 9/11.
Yeah, but he can't
like
tell you now.
So he thinks that he's doing his same game that he always plays, which is tell what the story is, but what I'm going to say about it is what I'm teasing.
Yeah.
And he says that he's going to be judicious about it and he has to be careful about what he says.
Right.
Keep that in
which based on what you said up top suggests he was not very judicious.
If he's
Napolitano would say he's in trouble.
If he's being careful, I can't imagine what willy-nilly Alex would be like.
I killed JFK.
So I'm just going to talk about the story already because I think this is the best way to do this.
Okay.
On New Year's Eve, a hacker, a group of hackers calling themselves the Dark Overlord, announced that they had hacked 18,000 pages of emails and disclosure agreements from Hiscox, which is an insurer, Lloyd's of London, another insurer, and Hush Blackwell, a law firm, regarding 9/11. They dropped the encrypted files for download with keys to decrypt a couple of the files, and those ones that they released aren't really all that damning. This group is saying that unless their demands are met and they're paid a ransom through Bitcoin, they will slowly release more decryption keys to reveal more sensitive information. They've even invited China, Russia, and even terrorist organizations like ISIS to bid to receive the documents, which should tell you that they're definitely really cool and clearly have America's best interests at heart.
Nicely done, fellas.
It's a classic cyber blackmail operation, and there's no evidence as of right now that anything in those supposed 18,000 documents actually prove anything. In fact, Lloyd's of London and Hush Blackwell both confirmed that they reviewed their cybersecurity and there was no evidence that they'd been breached.
Man, what a bluff this would be if it were a bluff.
Hiscox did find that they had been penetrated. They had had a hack in April of this year. But it's unclear if this has anything to do with that necessarily.
Right.
Possibly could. Whatever the reality of this story is remains to be seen. But as of right now, there is no reason to report this as coming proof that 9/11 is a false flag. The Dark Overlord has a history of cyber extortion. It's kind of what they do. And it's a representative of the UK National Cybersecurity Center points out that while evidence of the stolen data is often provided by this group, quote, the volume and sensitivity of the data may be exaggerated to maximize impact. This is what extortionists do. They make perceived damage. They make the idea of the perceived damage that will be done by not complying with their demands seem devastating, whether or not what they have lives up to that expectation. From an article in Forbes, quote, experts agree the material the Dark Overlord claims to have is not as game-changing as it seems. Ian Thornton Trump, the head of cybersecurity at AmTrust International, says this latest incident sounds like, quote, cyber criminal bravado. Quote, the fact that the firms are named, you know, in terms of like Hiscox and that,
yeah,
makes me want to believe that they've refused to pay the ransoms. So this is kind of just a pressure tactic from the Dark Overlord to force the ransom issue.
Okay, so you think, or so this guy would seem to suggest that these companies have already been contacted by,
yes,
the Dark Overlord.
Almost certainly.
And because they rejected
pay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
That is what cybersecurity experts and people who have studied the tactics of extortionists on the internet do believe. And so everybody who's actually chimed in on this in, like, you know, official capacities, people who know what's going on, are like, yeah, this just seems like a pattern that the Dark Overlord has. because spoiler alert, they're a group or a person, it's unclear, who's existed for a long time. They leaked a season of Orange is the New Black that they had hacked.
Oh, like, yeah.
Before they held it for ransom.
For ransom, of course.
And they didn't pay, so they pay, like they released the, it's not like they don't have hacking capabilities.
Yeah,
but
no,
also,
clearly.
There are other instances of them not having as good of stuff as they pretend to when the extortion demands aren't met.
But that they're still around after being in operation for so long. And
not
that
so long, but a while.
Yeah, but a while.
Yeah.
Suggests one, they're good enough to escape, so far. We don't know how long that will last for.
Sure.
But two, because they have so many publicized failures, it would suggest to me that they probably have a few unpublicized successes.
I don't know. It's possible. It's possible.
And that
but there's
seems
also,
to make sense.
But it also indicates to me that it is obviously more than one person, because I think the character of the different things that they've done over the years have been so different. It's all extortion related, basically. But the having the goods or not having the goods have been so variable between different campaigns, in quotes, that it makes me think there's probably some people who operate under that moniker who are like, well, you got it. You it's do like, have the season of Orange is the New Black. And then there are people who are like, they don't have all of the, or they do have like things that they hacked from a hospital database or something like that.
Sure.
But it's not what they say it is. It's not as damning as they say it is.
Right.
So the idea here is that with these 9/11 documents that they have, they're presenting it in a way that is like, this will bring down this corrupt system and prove that 9/11's a false flag and all this shit.
Yeah.
But it could just be that they have these, these insurance it could very well be that they hacked insurance memos and stuff like that from people in long protracted court cases that don't demonstrate that 9/11 was fake.
Right.
But might be embarrassing to people, or might be their private business in the streets and like that. No one wants that, but it's the overpromising that you hope will get you your extortion demand.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that's important to consider about this is that they're asking for Bitcoin, which is a red flag. Because right now, Bitcoin's going through some trouble. I don't know if you know that. And most people who would be...
I have not heard anything about Bitcoin for the last year. I assume it has just kept going up, baby.
Through the roof. Most people who work in cyber espionage or understand that world wouldn't probably want their money in Bitcoin. They'd probably want it through another
unmarked bills,
much less traceable cyber currency, because tons of them.
Yeah, I usually get my $10 million through PayPal.
And there's no specified amount, which implies that the amount would be known to the people at those organizations or whatever.
Which does
also imply previous contact.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on here that it has the look of someone who... Well, obviously, the Dark Overlord is an extortion operation. So you have that. And then you have on top of that a history of often over-promising and under-delivering.
Yeah.
So you have that. And then you have asking for the money in Bitcoin, which makes you think that if the Dark Overlord is a group, then what you have is probably the lesser part of that group, or maybe the weaker part of that group, because they're asking for it in Bitcoin as opposed to one of these other more safe, more protected, less traceable. Oh, there's tons of them.
That's what I'm interested in. Now that I know that there are more protected,
there's so many.
Yeah.
There's so many.
Cool.
Bitcoin's the one that took off because it became so much, out of nowhere. Became, well, because there's a lot of fraudsters out there who did the pump and dump scams.
Silk Road. The whole thing.
There is that, which led to Bitcoin being the most prominent piece of it. But there's so many other ones that you could use. There are also indications that I was reading about that, we are now at a place where Bitcoin can possibly be traceable. So, people in intelligence could trace. If this person really wanted their money in Bitcoin, it wouldn't be the safe option for them. And if they were the part of this elite hacker thing, they would know that for sure.
Yeah.
And would never want their money in Bitcoin.
Right.
So there are red flags and questions about it. If I had to guess, I would say, they probably got a hold of some documents.
Yeah.
They're overinflating what they have because they want to make a bunch of money.
Right.
Hopefully.
Good on them.
But also are not the best cyber terrorists in the world because they're asking for it in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
It leads me to believe that that's sort of the picture we got.
Right.
I don't know, but
right.
I don't know.
Well, but if they have proof, if they have, see, here's the thing though. If they have 18,000 documents that prove 9/11 was an inside job.
Right.
I really hope nobody pays the ransom, right?
Right.
Isn't that the
This isn't how this isn't how I would want it to go, but
right.
Yeah.
But that's the greatest fucking public service you could possibly do.
I strongly disagree only because of the means of doing it. Because of the extortion part.
Oh, no. I agree. I agree with that part.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you. I'm talking about the other governments and the terrorists not buying it. Mm. Their public service is being like, I'm calling your bluff. And our public gain is, holy shit, 9/11 was a fucking inside job?
Were someone to be a benevolent hacker in some way and come up with that information and leak it through channels that could vet it, and there'd be like an actual, I don't know, what would it be? Like, it would be unprecedented in many ways. Like like that sort of operation that involved like really committed principled journalists. Like that sort of thing. If that were the path it went, I'd be interested in that somewhat. The fact that it's some unnamed hacker or collective that is looking to enrich themselves and offering to sell this to ISIS.
Yeah.
It makes me think like it's probably a scam. It's probably a lot of a scam.
Almost certainly.
And it's trading on, conspiracy theories.
Right.
And I just,
On the other hand.
I like the other hand.
Maybe the biggest problem that Woodward and Bernstein really encountered with Deep Throat is not fucking selling the information in the first place. They could be rich as fuck.
I think Nixon might
still be president.
I think they did okay.
I mean, they did okay, but they could have been
But that's the flip side of it is like, let's imagine they do have proof that 9/11 was fake and someone in the cabal pays the ransom and then no one ever knows. Aren't they just as evil as the cabal?
Oh, perhaps more so.
None of this has played out in any way. There's no proof that they've like put out that 9/11 is fake. It's all the what if, what's in those documents.
Right.
Alex is being tricked by this again. He gets tricked by this a lot. This sort of the Schrodinger's cat kind of thing. The like what could be in that box.
Yeah.
And
if I'm China, I'm thinking I can take a loss on this one, right? Like, how much could they possibly be asking for? How much could they possibly be asking for? And even if it's not true, it's like, what? We spent $10 million?
We look foolish, but it's like you have like, I don't know, a pair.
Yeah.
The pot is too big. This guy bets like $50,000 at you. You got, I don't know, $1 million in chips.
Yeah.
You're like, I shouldn't pay $50,000. I know I've lost, but whatever.
Fuck it. Why not?
Exactly. It's that sort of like strategy.
The
like,
bet is too weak.
No matter what amount they're asking for, if that is real, then yes, China or Russia would pay for it to use against them.
Of course.
It would destroy America.
If it's real,
that
is worth $1 trillion fucking, that's worth the GDP of the United States.
Especially
bananas.
For these places that don't want American influence to be in places where they seek influence.
Exactly.
It would be the fucking greatest thing ever.
So it can't be real.
I know we're sort of dancing around a ton of issues, but like all of them are important in their own way because they're all demonstrative of how like, if you just critically think about this for a second, there's no way this is real.
Yeah.
There's no reason to suspect it's real because it's being put out by a cyber extortion racket.
Who are known for
extortion.
Exactly.
And so, like, it's interesting that this is Alex's big news. I thought whenever he started talking about it, it was going to be some sort of, like, hooray for this.
Yeah.
And that makes sense.
For sure.
But the way he covers it, I was never prepared for this. This is the most I hate how I always say everything is like a superlative.
You've got a lot of superlatives the 2 years we've been doing this.
Because Alex keeps blowing my mind. Mm. Like, when I was listening to this, there's no way I could have expected this to be his position on it.
All right.
He's so crazy.
Here we
Listen to this.
So here's the Zero Hedge article, zerohedge.com, up on newswars.com and infowars.com. And this is a big deal. not just this story, but how hackers can get into these systems and then use it. And then the fact that Trump has said, look out, I'll release the 9/11 info on the Clintons and the Bushes. And Trump has come out and said there's more than one way to declassify your illegal spying on me and how you funded the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and now ISIS. And I've said for a good year, Trump should just, through patriots in U.S. intelligence agencies that already have all this, put it out as if they're hackers. And then have the cover story that they're putting a ransom out to these companies. But really, it's just a way to bring attention to it and then release it. Because they can't release it. These law firms, no matter what happens, they're not going to release it. They'll get payoffs in the back, in my view, because you cannot release it. It's too damning. Bombs in the buildings, you know, black ops, all of it.
Are you understanding what he's saying? Because this is the most fucked up thing imaginable.
Okay.
Or the worst way to cover this story would be to say, this is Trump.
So what he's saying is that Trump wants to release the 9/11 is an inside job document.
You bet. These insurers and one law firm.
Right. But he can't because the lawyers would get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, he is releasing
Congress.
It.
He later says Congress might get in the way, too.
Congress might get in the way?
A lot of lawyers in Congress, though, to be fair.
You don't think that Congress might be like, hey, let's not put out the 9/11 was an inside job shit.
Right, right.
Which can they do? If you're the president, you can just declassify whatever you want.
You bet.
That's part of the rules.
You bet.
Like, if JFK was an inside job, tomorrow Trump could be like, hey, JFK is an inside job. Simply by saying it yep. is declassified.
I mean, we went through this horse and pony show like 6 months ago when Alex was like, he's about to declassify everything about JFK.
Yeah.
And he's like, nah.
Nah. Yeah.
He can't do that. With the stroke of a pen. It's not...
But it would be politically...
A lot of backlash.
It would be politically suicide for him.
Sure.
For him to... Actually, I kind of think that might be the best move for him. Like, politically, for most people, if he just revealed that JFK was an inside job, I think even I would be like, hey, good on you, man.
If you want to change my position on Trump, I mean, I'd still like think he was a bigot and a dick.
Because he is.
But if you wanted to change the legacy to a complicated legacy,
yeah.
all it would take is for him to declassify JFK documents mm-hmm. that prove that the government was behind it
yep.
and prove that 9/11, the government was behind it, and then him die.
Bananas.
That's all it would
yeah,
take.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Stroke of a pen, he declassifies all that, it goes out publicly, the globalists kill him, because then it would be like, huh.
Right? Huh. Wouldn't everybody have to go like, I get it? I don't, like, on his last, so if he loses in 2020,
it would be,
his last day should be that. If
right.
if it's true, his last day, because he's fucking Trump. He doesn't give a shit. It's out
Alex
of,
has already said he's ready to die.
Yeah, out of spite, Trump should release the America has done all the inside jobs.
Why not?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Why not?
Do it. Instead, he has hired a group or perhaps created a group of hackers, which over the past couple of years has been a cyber extortion group, all at the behest of Trump, in order to build a backstory so he can then release the 9/11 was an inside job story through them.
There's a lot of problems with
this. There's a lot of problems with this story.
A lot of real world problems with this narrative that Alex is embarking on. And I would say don't do this. I would say don't do this, because he is very clearly saying that, like, this is not a hacking group. This is
Trump.
Yeah. And in this next clip, he makes clear and implicates himself in having advanced knowledge of this.
So pay the F up. That's the headline. Hackers threaten to dump secret 9/11 attack files if Bitcoin ransom not met. We'll be providing many answers about 9/11 conspiracies through our 18,000 secret documents leak from Et, Hiscox, Comms, and others.
Doesn't even know
a hacking collective known as the Dark Overlord. Wonder who that is.
Derek.
Sorry. On New Year's Eve, that it had broken into the computer systems. They already have it all. This is parallel construction. Only the government will understand the stuff I'm saying, but that's who this is for.
I get it.
Sorry, I'm not control myself. Hold on. A little bit of glee here. Just had a little bit of a mental orgasm. Let me stop.
So he says that the military understands what he's talking about.
Yeah,
he's like, it's a parallel construction. What he's saying is that, like, all of these, like, these people are creating this hacker, identity in order to, like, have a parallel for the release of the documents.
Okay. So is he?
They already have, these people, he's going to spell it out in the next clip, but what he's saying is that these are good people within the intelligence community who are doing this, but they can't do it themselves with the documents, so they create this parallel construction of this hacking narrative. These hackers have done this in order for it to be deflected onto that for their actions, which they need to do because they're good people within the intelligence community.
Okay, so his knowing laugh isn't the QAnon. His knowing laugh is, I wonder who these people are. Obviously, it's the government.
Right.
Not
the good
like
people. It's the Steve Pachenik counter-coup narrative all over again.
It's not like he actually knows who these guys are.
He's definitely implying that he does.
Yes. But he's thinking it's the government, right?
Good people within the intelligence
community. Right.
Yes.
At the behest of Trump.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
That is the narrative that he's putting forward.
Gotcha.
I don't believe his narrative at all.
Absolutely not. That's because it's dumb. It is dumb.
So let's listen to this next clip real quick where Alex just spells it out a little more before we get too deep into it.
A hacking collective
known as
the Dark Overlords, or Patriots in U.S. Intelligence, announced on New Year's Eve that it had broken into the computer systems. You mean they had it all day one, of the law firm and obtained files related to the September 11th attacks. What did I tell you about a month ago? You can go pull the interviews up. I said,
sorry,
get ready for all the 9/11 stuff to come out.
He always says that, though. It doesn't matter.
I know. Never forget that.
Oh, but of course, the president's not involved. I'm telling the president and everybody else, release everything now. Just battle slay them. We need to crush them. The avalanche is unstoppable. Forget playing games. Fire at will. Let's go. Let's get it on. My God, we're on the attack here. Let's stop playing games. We have them.
No, you don't. But, like, so my position very clearly is that this is a extortion group on the internet, and they're probably playing with fire a little bit, but they've done that many times
idea.
In the past,
they've
seemed to be okay.
That they've avoided detection for this long is spectacular on
them. Hackers are pretty good at what they do. You know, like, it's generally, you know, you have a lot of ways to hide your identity.
Right.
There's very gifted folk.
But they got the anonymous people pretty early on by turning one of those dudes.
Right, but you had to find that dude first. If you make steps to make sure no one gets detected, you know, if you do that, like, in the same way that, like, Lloyd's of London said, no one came into our, we know that because we have a pretty good security infrastructure and we can trace if there's any,
so either they're the best security hackers
or it's possible.
Yeah.
Who knows?
But see, the problem there is to avoid detection is switching the game. Like, it's far easier to hack people because you're playing offense there. You get the first move.
Right.
But in order to avoid detection, then you switch to defense and you don't get the first move. It's far easier to hack than it is to avoid being hacked.
Right. But if you are a collective of hackers or even just one person who's pretty talented at it, you don't start doing the offensive stuff without a good defensive position.
No, of course.
So you already, like, that's implied in the act of hacking.
Right. I just want to talk about how Magnus Samuelson wound up.
Let's talk about Lord Nikon. Lord Nikon. Listen, it's irrelevant. It really is. Because that's my position, that this is what the situation is. From everything I can tell, from everybody who I've read talk about this, who has expertise in cyber espionage and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
That's the position that's being put forth. That's what I think is probably the case. And the fact that no one seems to be worried about this.
Yeah, like, that's a big issue.
You know, you don't see, like, 'cause if it were real,
It would have been paid for immediately.
Or you would have.
Instantaneously, you would have given out. Although at the same time, paying an extortioner, it's
only
still
leads
gonna,
to a worse extortion.
It's right. Either going to be more extortion or they're going to release it anyway.
It's why you never go along with blackmail, because generally when someone's blackmailing you, if you give in to the first stage of the blackmail, that act will be used as the second stage of blackmail.
Of course.
So you just take the hit the first time someone threatens you.
The real information is far less damaging than the ongoing blackmail.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So with that aside, this is just nonsense.
Absolutely.
But the problem comes when Alex's narrative about it is that it's good guys within the intelligence community. Now, we don't know that. I don't know anything. It's possible.
Now, is it?
Nope. But in a hypothetical world, it's possible.
Of course it's not.
But in a hypothetical,
because we don't live within Bourne Identity or whatever.
But we're
the fuck
living
it is.
In Alex's space right now, so let's engage with him on his turf.
Sure.
So if that is possible, that is crazy illegal. That is insanely illegal.
Yeah.
Alex is implying that he knows about this, is thrilled about it, and Trump is in on it. It's not true. But if what he's saying is true, what he's doing on his radio show right now is implicating Trump in a huge fucking national security issue.
Yeah.
Because these people are offering to sell this information to fucking ISIS.
Yeah.
So if Trump is behind that.
Trump has got ISIS's dirty shit up his asshole.
Yeah. I mean, I think that really what is going on here is Alex doesn't have a full grasp of the facts. He heard that someone is offering 9/11 factual information and all that
stuff.
He
got a hard on, and then he's giving it out to
everybody. And he's starting to, I think probably, he might still be in touch with Steve Pachanik, or maybe Roger's doing this, who knows.
Yeah.
One of his dumb assholes who he talks to behind the scenes has created this narrative for him that it's the good guys in intelligence who are doing this because it fits so much into his spy movie reality.
Right.
It fits into just everything that he lives about. But here, this next clip is super important.
Before you go any further, let me just say, here's my other kind of thought about this, is that as much and as often as he has tried to jump on the QAnon train and use that to bolster his credibility.
He wants to own it.
He's not doing it. So he creates his own.
Yeah.
What is QAnon other than Q is Trump and he's releasing all
of
these
documents?
But that
is part of the QAnon stuff too. That Q is working with Trump or is Trump.
Right.
Like even in their world.
But he's trying to own it.
Yes.
I
mean, we've seen that since, I mean, it's been like most of this last year, in terms of his Zach narratives stuff like that. It's always been an embracing of how popular QAnon is on the internet, but never wanting to get in with it because he wants to own it.
Right.
It's the same thing with his position towards Bitcoin, quite frankly, is the idea of like, I don't want to get involved with that.
I want to get involved with Maxcoin.
Or gold. Like, it's just, I want the benefit of what makes you afraid and gets you into this thing.
Yeah.
But I don't want to lower myself.
Right.
I want to own it.
I don't jump on trains. I run them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm the ringmaster.
Gotcha.
Now, the only reason I was barreling towards the next clip is because I think it proves that Alex doesn't know what he's talking about.
Okay.
I think it's just that he's talking shit. He's found these stray variables that he can work into a narrative, and some worm tongue is whispering in his ear, this is about the good people in intelligence.
I'm sorry I interrupted you. I just wanted to make...
No,
I just,
it was
I wouldn't
a worthwhile
be,
diversion.
I just wanted to be clear on that because I wasn't... Yeah.
No, I think it was a rare...
Rare good interruption from Jordan.
Medium rare.
No. Put it on the board.
No, I'm saying it's less. It's less than rare. It's medium frequency that when you interrupt me, there's a good point. But that was a good point.
Thank you very much, Dan.
It was worthwhile.
We can continue doing this for another episode.
So I just think this is demonstrative that Alex doesn't know the situation. He just has a narrative in mind because he says this.
You know, I can spend about an hour just on what Dark Overlord means. It's not saying they're dark. Overlord was the invasion of Normandy against Hitler. Overlord means there's good people overlording the darkness.
Oh, boy.
It means overriding the dark is what that means if you flip it.
But he doesn't seem to recognize in any way that Dark Overlord is a hacking organization that has existed and extorted people for years. Like, he does, he's not dealing with this in any real way. Like, he's acting like it's somebody that popped up. Now, something that you sort of obliquely referenced earlier, the idea that, like, Trump created this extortion outfit as a cover or whatever.
A few years ago.
Right. That might be what he would have to go to as his defense, but that's flimsy
as hell. Were anybody to call him on.
Right.
Yeah,
that's flimsy
as
hell. This is an entity that has existed on the internet, and Alex has never been aware of it, but he now is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to create this, like, it's all the symbology of the name. It's, it's dark, but you flip the dark, and like,
which is the QAnon justification cycle all over
again. It is the same thought process.
100%.
He wants that world so badly, but he can't handle not being the head of it.
Right.
Like, he yells all the time, I'm the head of, I'm behind 9/11 truth.
I'm the original QAnon, that whole thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah. It's, pride comes before the fall. Or it's, after, or in between, in the middle of the fall. Pride comes a lot of places during the fall.
Right.
And,
It is weird knowing the full context, because were you to not have the full context of his jealousy, pettiness, his need to get attention, combined with the fact that QAnon is far more popular amongst his own fans than even he is at this point, if you didn't realize that, you'd think that he was coming up with a completely normal conspiracy theory, whereas within the full context, we realize how pathetic and weak bullshit this really is.
Well, I think that even...
because QAnon's bullshit is pathetic and weak
as
well.
But I think even without that context, you could very easily see how weak this is, just if you understand what Dark Overlord is doing and the history of extortion and all that shit. I think you could.
But most people don't have that context either.
Well, they could find it with a quick Google search. But I think what you add to it from our show and the time that we've spent looking at Alex, you see even if you take like the reality of QAnon out of this,
right,
you do have consistent trends of Alex being so jealous of this internet world that he doesn't have sort of ownership of.
Oh,
like
my
these 4chan places and Reddit, these communities where he's not like able to dictate this, you know, it's the same thing that he used to feel about the mainstream media. Like in 2009, there's so many resentments that he doesn't control the narrative. We don't control this. And even as Trump was coming into relevance in 2015, there was so many times that would him and Owen Schroyer would be like, you, now the mainstream media, you don't control what we're talking about.
Yeah.
We do.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. And I think there's a snake eating its own tail in some ways in terms of the alternative media. That Alex now recognizes that the alternative stuff is also out of his control.
Yeah.
That is now like, he also doesn't control that. So 6-9 months ago or so, whenever he's getting mad at QAnon at the first point, he's mad about that because it is that recognition.
Right.
But he's never stopped trying to take exactly what QAnon is talking about and make it his shit.
Of course.
And he knows better than them.
Yes. Yes. The thing that must most infuriate him is the actual Anon part of Q. Because if there was a name, like it, for instance, Glenn Beck. He would not be trying to co-opt it. He would be attacking everybody. He would find the guy. He would be like, this guy's full of bullshit. This guy is not the guy you want to follow. You want to stick with me. The fact that it's Anon and there's no one personally for him to attack
the mystery,
makes him need to take it over.
The mystery allows the space wherein he can own it.
Yes.
Because he can't own Glenn Beck.
While at the same time, Glenn Beck can't insult it.
He does insult it a little bit.
Yeah, but
he insults the institution of it, but he doesn't insult necessarily the idea behind it.
Right.
He just tries to co-opt the idea behind it with an appearance of elevation with like, no, you guys, QAnon is steering you down dumb tracks.
Yeah.
I've got Zach who's totally real.
You know what's strange to me is his best move to fight against QAnon. Well, actually, you know what? It's not strange. Because the best move to fight against QAnon is to actually go into the history of Q and how it's this book from the 80s and all of these things tracked
also
perfectly.
A weird character on Star Trek.
Exactly. It's got this whole long history of being full of bullshit. Of course, he should do that, I guess, if he wants to discredit it. But at the same time, he can't do it because that's
it's a Trump positive entity.
Yeah. And it's like a great conspiracy.
It's a mythology that is so Trump centric.
Right.
That were he to attack that, he would call into question a lot of the other Trump narratives that he has.
And furthermore, if he starts debunking conspiracy theories instead of joining them, he's fucked.
Right. So this story, like, big picture.
Yeah.
I think we already know what we think. You're welcome to disagree with me if you want, but I think we agree it's a cyber extortion ring that is.
Disagree.
Okay. We kind of
now that I'm welcome to, I will.
We kind of see what Alex's take on it is, and what he's saying is really dangerous. Only in a sense that, like, if like when Guccifer 2.0 started to come around, no one really understood what it was.
Yeah.
But then, as investigations started to happen, they started to trace the VPNs and like the logins of the person presenting themselves as Guccifer 2.0, and they found that it was in like legit GRU offices and like that sort of thing. That's when it became like, okay, this is a cutout for. I'm not saying that this hacking operation is that. I have no idea, and I have no reason to think that. But I think Alex is playing with fire unnecessarily, because there's a chance that it is a cyber extortion racket and he's just lying about it, and then good day to you.
Yeah.
No consequence for that.
That's
whatever.
Fantastic.
It's fine.
Hey, you had a great day.
In the world we live in now, especially, it's really risky to associate yourself with people like this or stories like this.
Oh, yeah?
Because what if it does turn out that people are able to trace these hacks? People are able to trace the people behind it. Someone accidentally didn't sign into their VPN one time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got the laptop where the hacking happened. Like there is a decent chance that it could turn out you are now associating yourself and telling a story about something that links you to a fucking international felony.
I wouldn't even say.
Is it possible? Like, I don't know.
I wouldn't even say it's a decent chance. I would say it's a massive, overwhelming chance, because if there was.
Well, not overwhelming chance that information will come out.
Oh, no. But that's what that you will be caught for it. Because if there were. I'm not suggesting that there isn't some hacker that is the best there's ever been at cyber extortion, but if you're talking about actual 9/11 is proof documents,
right?
That means that every fucking hacker within the Chinese government is going to be trying to break it. Every hacker in Russia is going to be trying to break it. Every hacker in the United
every
States.
Every other country.
For every
not
government.
Not just those two.
For every single government. Everybody they've ever had who is any good at cybersecurity would be searching for this one guy.
Or it would also, or and both.
Yeah.
And or it would become a bidding war between clandestine cutouts of all of these governments. Everybody would want it. No one would want to bid on it. So there would be all these various like fronts.
Yeah.
Where you would like launder weird cryptocurrency through, and it would turn into, absolutely. They'd get $1 trillion fucking dollars for it, and we'd never hear about it.
Yeah,
again.
No. If they were the single greatest hacker in history, maybe there's a 10% chance they can pull this off. If they're anything less than that, the combined cybersecurities of all the world's governments would probably get to you.
Because we're recording this on Thursday night on
we
the
have
3rd,
not seen the documents released yet.
Well, I've seen pieces of the stuff that have been decrypted.
Right. Haven't seen the end of American civilization because we know it yet.
We don't know how this story is going to play out, and it'll be interesting to see how it does, because there's a real decent chance this is going to be a fart in the wind, and it'll be a nothing.
100%.
Much like the Antifa Soros documents and stuff like that, which Alex will just later bring up as proof of things
without
ever
getting
being anything meaningful.
Of course.
But I don't know. As a human being, as someone who can only go on the facts on the ground, there's a chance that this proves 9/11. Very small chance. And if it is, If it is, strap in, because we got a fucked up time ahead of us.
Well, and the greatest whistleblowers of all. We have Snowden, we have Manning, we have Reality Winner, we have these people. Their move wasn't secret hacking.
No.
Their move was being within the very agencies and getting the documents that way.
Yeah, and that's why the people who are
heroically,
so,
by the way.
Well, but that's why the people who are so manipulatively, like, trying to deflect attention from the WikiLeaks and the DNC hacks. That's why Seth Rich is such an important piece of their narrative.
Yeah.
Is because he would fit that mold
of
someone inside who was a whistleblower.
Right.
But they have no evidence of that.
Right.
But that's why they are so disgraceful on that front. But.
Sorry for again.
No, it's all right. As it relates to 9/11, we have this next clip where Alex talks about Trump vis-a-vis 9/11 and how much of a genius he was in 2011.
Oh, God.
2001.
Trump was not involved in all this. He went on television the day after and 6 days after 9/11 and said there were bombs in the buildings. Should we cue it up and play it again for you?
You probably should. So real quick. Trump did suggest in an interview on 9/11 that he thought there were
This is a problem!
Well, what do you mean?
I just mean that it's strange to imagine that our president is a 9/11 truther.
Well, he wasn't back then.
Yeah.
And Alex is presenting that he is, because I've gone back and listened to the
interviews. Yeah, that's what he's saying.
But Trump thought that the terrorists had bombs on the planes, because he was suspicious about the idea of the iron and steel girders.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't about the idea that the building fell down. It was, like, if you listen to the actual interviews, it's about the penetration into the building.
Uh-huh.
He was talking about how the windows were so narrow in World Trade Center buildings, and it was because of all of the iron. He's talking about how the building was built from the outside in terms of the structure of it.
Uh-huh.
There were so many steel beams that they couldn't have wide windows. And that's what he was talking about. He was talking about the idea that it's strange that a plane was able to fly into it and penetrate those steel beams. He suggested that there were bombs, not that there were bombs at the bottom or whatever to bring the building down, but that the planes had bombs also to increase the impact in order to allow them to penetrate those steel beams. He did say that in an interview. But
what
Alex
if they were
just
flying at 30,000 miles an hour?
Oh, you bet. That's a possibility. Let's talk to some fucking aviation and engineering people. You can.
It seems like if you're flying really, really fast, and I don't know a lot about physics, and hey, you know what? Maybe this one time, because Trump is a real estate magnate, even though he's a complete failure and a pile of shit, and he doesn't pay his contractors, perhaps he has some engineering that I don't have.
Mm-hmm.
Or some engineering knowledge that
I bet he does know more than you.
Yeah.
But not more than
I expect that. Yeah, I expect that.
Somewhere in the
middle. However, a plane flying 30,000 miles per hour is a pretty good penetrating object.
I'm not sure that's the speed they're flying, but yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
It is. It does seem like it would be equivalent to a bomb.
Yeah, 30,000 miles an hour might be too
fast.
But
that statement that he made isn't indicative that he thought that there was some sort of an inside conspiracy or anything like that.
Yeah.
It is just sort of a wrestling with the idea that this happened.
Yeah.
Like, if you listen to that interview, that is what you come away from it with. Oh, also in an interview.
Why did I say 30,000 miles per hour?
I think you're thinking of 30,000 feet.
Yeah. That's like a rocket.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Also, in an interview hours after the attacks, he said, quote, 40 Wall Street actually was the second tallest building in downtown Manhattan, Trump replied. And it was actually before the World Trade Center was the tallest. And then when they built the World Trade Center, it became known as the second tallest. And now it's the tallest. Also, for fun, just to be petty, even after 9/11, 40 Wall Street wasn't the tallest building in downtown Manhattan. That honor goes to 70 Prime. So Trump's building, what he was bragging about, wasn't even the tallest.
Yeah,
but on
9/11,
hours after the attack, his response was, well, now my building's the tallest. And also
that's definitely not because he's a fucking psychopath.
Also, a fun fact about 40 Wall Street, he only bought that because Ferdinand Marcos of the Philippines, the dictator, he embezzled millions and millions of dollars from his country and then hid it by buying real estate in New York.
Nah, come on.
And 40 Wall Street was one of the buildings that he bought.
What?
And then it didn't really work out. And he got in trouble about all that stuff.
Why did he get in trouble?
And then the building fell into disrepair.
Oh.
And so Trump was able to buy it like really
cheap.
Yeah. He was able to buy it really cheap and rehabilitate it as the Trump building.
Great.
And then for years, it's housed tons of criminals. Tons of criminals. So many people, not people necessarily, but businesses that have been housed in 40 Wall Street have been indicted. It's crazy. I don't know if every building in New York has that kind of batting average. I don't know, but their batting average looks bad. Also, Trump University, their address was 40 Wall Street.
That's so much like a horror movie house. That's so much like a haunted house where it's like, oh, this corrupt fascist bought it and then died. And the ghosts of corrupt fascists have existed and fucking infiltrated everyone who's lived into that building since.
It's hard not to look at it that way.
Yeah.
And then the added layer on that that's really fun, and I don't think this means anything, but it's super fucking weird, is that Roger Stone, through Black Manafort and Stone, his old lobbying group, They used to do a ton of
work. I want a musical called Black Manafort.
Before that, Ferdinand Marcos went down and all that.
Yeah.
They used to be employed as lobbyists for
God
Marcos.
Damn it.
So like, before all of that, Roger Stone was involved in lobbying for this brutal fucking dictator who embezzled a ton of money and also had a habit, I don't know if you know this, of like taking political dissidents in the middle of the night and then dismembering their bodies.
No, come on.
Like just taking them and like disfiguring them and shit and then leaving them out in public for other people to find as a message about
like
what happens.
Like fucking Mexican cartel?
Kind of like that, yeah.
Jesus.
As a message of what happens if you, it was called salvaging.
Oh my God.
He was doing that while Roger Stone was a lobbyist for him, and Roger doesn't seem to fucking give a shit about that. And it's interesting that he took this money that he embezzled and then bought 40 Wall Street, didn't work out, and then Trump ended up buying it. I honestly don't think that there's any, like, one-to-one connection there.
Right.
Like, that somehow Roger Stone...
Spiritually, there's definitely connection.
Spiritually, yes. But, like, I don't think that... I'm not trying to present a conspiracy where, like, Roger Stone was lobbying for this guy.
No,
he bought 40 Wall Street and then Trump bought it.
Yeah,
there's
absolutely
a meaningful connection there.
Yeah.
But it is so interesting. It's so interesting that history is just... It's
a coincidence that kind of makes you think that all evil is just at least knows each other.
Yeah. So we have one last clip. And I'll say that I only got about maybe like just shy of 2 hours into this episode before like I was like, I have too many clips. Like if I keep going through this episode, we're just going to end up in who knows. And whatever he says can't be worse than what he's saying already. Like, he's already implying that Trump is behind these hacks and
all this stuff.
Like, what are you going to do to more complicate this, this narrative? And so we end with
Trump hired a Russian team to pull this off.
It's already
no
kind
collusion.
Of implied that.
No collusion.
So anyway, here's Alex celebrating, his coup of some sort. Like, he's delivered this narrative perfectly. Hurrah.
This is the stuff that victory's made of.
Is it?
Of course, the president has nothing to do. Why just release the documents through Congress? They're all crapping themselves. Oh, hackers are going to release it now. Yes!
I'm vibing on this song.
That's a good vibe.
I'm going to be honest. I'm vibing on that song.
Yeah. This bums me out. Not like because it's a bummer, but just because like, I don't like to see this celebration because I know it's so short lived.
Yeah. And
like,
it's fake.
It's transient. Like I know I've listened to so much of Alex's show that like, I can't even be happy for him. Like I know that within a week.
Know. I kind of can.
I know that within a week, this is just going to become a waypoint for him. You know,
right.
It's just going to become another like little narrative that didn't work out that he will yell back about whenever he needs to reinforce another point
of course.
The future.
Of course.
It's a bummer. It's a bummer. And then I think this is something that we don't talk about a ton generally because it's never as explicit, but like what we've talked about in a little bit already is like this, this is such a pathetic attempt to reclaim QAnon stuff that it's a see-through bummer.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know how to put it. It's just, I leave this cold because I, on one level, I'm super happy about the idea that, like, in the same way that on Christmas Eve, Alex said that he told Roger to talk to Assange, you know, like that sort of thing. I feel like this is in par with that. Like, he's revealing that someone told him something.
Were he to be correct, this is the biggest crime he could possibly commit.
But even if he is not correct, he's revealing that someone told him this. Someone absolutely is feeding this to him. This isn't his own analysis.
Right. Well, at the very least, somebody is telling him that somebody else is telling him this lie, though, which begs the question of who's telling him this bullshit lie.
There is something behind this. There's someone behind this who is feeding this narrative to him. And I'm not sure who it is.
Yeah.
But it's someone who doesn't have Alex's best interest at heart.
Absolutely not.
And I enjoy that on one level. But I also don't, because there's so little legs to this. Like, there's two ways this possibly can play out.
Yeah.
Actually, there's probably like three or four. But two main ways this can play out.
Mm-hmm.
And one is these people who are in this hacking collective get arrested. That's one possible avenue.
The most likely.
I see that as kind of unlikely. Maybe someone in it will get arrested. But
if someone gets arrested, everyone gets arrested.
Sure.
That's the way hacking collectives work.
Possibly. I think you're right generally, but who knows? Who knows?
Right.
That's one possible way this could go. Two, no one pays the fucking ransom and this fizzles out. A couple of more decryption keys come out that show other documents that don't prove anything about 9/11.
Right.
And then the story just sort of disappears.
Right.
Or three, they have proof of 9/11.
Which, wow.
Which do you think I think is more likely?
Good on you. Four, they have proof that Hillary Clinton was in the World Trade Center and the only reason that she lost the presidency was because she died in 2001, 9/11. Hillary Clinton, ghost!
Number five.
What's number five?
Very close to four.
Okay.
Hillary was in the building, but she precipitated the 9/11 attacks because she needed the circumstances with which she could do the exact necessary pagan ritual in the basement with Linda Bloodworth Thomas.
Okay.
The producer of Designing Women.
Naturally.
They did a witch ceremony in the basement while the building was coming down because they needed that much loss of blood in order to provide the pagan sacrament that she would be required to have in order to lose the 2016 election.
Number six. The elevator was slow, so she got the towers to fall down so she could get to the base faster.
Number seven. Something else dumb. I don't know. Like, I don't think that there's any legs to this other than propaganda. Like, that's the only thing I guess I'm really saying.
I think,
like, we can clown on stuff and we can have fun, but, like, I really don't think I see a lot of the world and I see a lot of failed attempts at things, like narratives trying to be launched and stuff like that.
Even
a lot of the time we don't even talk about it because who gives a shit?
Yeah.
But this to me, it just stinks of a zero. It stinks of something that only exists to provide fodder for people like Alex.
100%.
These conservative propagandists.
Absolutely.
These right-wing propagandists.
Yeah.
These people doing it, the hackers, they're not doing it, I don't think, in order to be of service to Alex. They're doing it because they want that extortion money.
Of course.
And so you have two teams working sort of out of sorts with each other.
Yeah.
Like, they are creating that which Alex needs, but they don't give a shit about that.
Right.
They want their money, and they'll disappear as soon as the money isn't there.
Of course.
So that's kind of what I think.
The only two thoughts I have on this is, I mean, here's the worst part. Against all of my better judgment, against my hope that the worst things happen to Alex, I do kind of like that he's happy about this. He's been so depressed for so long. He's been so miserable, and it's kind of like, look, this is garbage. It's not going to go anywhere. You really got to quit. But I'm glad you got a day,
This is the danger, though, of living on a prayer, as Bon Jovi would say. You know, like, he's living for that rush of the narrative.
Of course. And
because the world in its real form is so bad and not going the way he wants.
Right.
He is forced to demonize Muslims who throw fireworks and stuff like that, or lionize and make a hero out of Bolsonaro, who's someone who he definitely shouldn't.
He's absolutely made Alex a hero about a racist, rapist, fascist, murderer.
Bigot, monster. Yeah, absolutely. Fascist, like someone who literally stands for everything Alex's career should be against.
Yeah.
But white people aren't in play, so he doesn't really care.
Right.
So, like, he has to do those things because everything is so bad in a real world place for him.
Yeah.
And this is what's so weird about the world is, like, it's bad for everyone.
Yeah.
Like the LGBT community, everyone is...
Everyone.
People in general are having a bad time.
Yeah.
Alex is also having a bad time, as evidenced by how desperate he is to feel happy about a cyber extortion group.
They're doing great.
Hearing his narratives.
At the behest of Trump.
They must be proof of my grand conspiracy that I have been putting forth, and I'm mad that QAnon is kind of co-opting and I must now reclaim. The fact that he's there is just like, you're not having fun either.
Yeah.
We could all be having fun if we worked towards a better future.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know how to put a button on this, but I'm delighted and also sad on equal levels of this beginning to 2019. It's just,
right. Here's my button. Here's my button.
No.
Dark Overlord.
My button.
Yeah. That's
Raspberry.
A fair button. That's a
Raspberry.
Fair button. Happy New Year, Dan.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
The secret of 2019 is.
No, the secret to 2019 is Lionel. This is not good. It's fine. I think it's good content and everything. And checking in with Alex and seeing where he's at, like, but if he's bringing this to like the beginning of the year, I mean, there's like 7 to 10 things we've talked about that he's just like way off on. And then his big story is this cyber espionage group as he's presenting it, which is actually a extortion racket.
Yeah. A group of kidnappers if they weren't extortion blackmailers on the cyber net right now, they would have been kidnappers in the 90s when Mel Gibson was making movies about it.
Spiritually similar, we probably don't have the balls to grab somebody.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not great. Not a great sign.
My button is this. To Dark Overlord, whether you be a man, a woman, a collective, or your pronoun is different. This was a bad idea. Because once you start tossing 9/11 around and documents proving that it was an inside job, even if you're lying, a lot more people are paying attention, man.
It's true.
A lot more people are paying attention. If you're going to cyber extort, dude, keep it on the low level. Hey, dude,
the consequences of playing this game are a little bit more than probably you want.
To reference a Mike Sheehan joke, stick with the mid-level terrorists. You know, we got 3 hostages. We'll give them to you for $90,000. How about that? What do I got to do to get you out of here with a hostage today? Like, stay in the...
Turn into a car dealer.
Yeah. Stay in the mid-range. Yeah. That's where you want to go.
Yeah, this sort of idea of, like, I have proof of the grandest conspiracy at the world's
of
number one
time.
Superpower.
Yeah.
It's like... what that would give you as a power chip is unbelievable.
The entire world.
Yeah.
As a power chip, that gives you... the world.
You now get to choose the next superpower, basically.
Yeah, essentially.
That's what you do.
Right?
Yeah.
There's no way.
You, as this hacker, get to choose who is the next ascendant power.
There's no way, if you can prove that 9/11 was an inside job, that you don't instantly become the most powerful human being on the planet.
Yeah, because what you do is that you have that which will destroy the superpower. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. instantaneously. There's no way the news cycle doesn't get destroyed when they find out that fucking G-Dubs and Cheney orchestrated 9/11.
And when that happens, we'll talk about it. And when that doesn't happen, Alex will stop talking about it.
Yep.
Anyway, we'll be back with another episode. But for now, this has been what Alex is doing in the present day. I don't
Indeed.
Know. We have a website, knowledgefight.com.
He's happier in the present day than we've seen him in months.
Only during that applause thing. Only when he's relishing this idea that he has secret information that these supposed inside patriots are doing this.
Right.
When they're not. It's a fucking extortion racket.
It is nice to know that
consistently, he's happy about something that's not real,
but
doesn't count.
But that's what I'm saying. The only consistent trend we've seen throughout Alex Jones's entire career is knowing laughter presages him being the most wrong any human being could ever be.
And him falling ass backwards into a criminal investigation.
Indeed. We have a Twitter account as well, Dan.
That's true. We're on, our website is knowledgefight.com.
It is.
We're on Twitter. It's knowledge_fight.
We got a Facebook group called Go Home and Tell Your Mother You're Lionel.
That's right.
You will be releasing the wiki on
the 7th.
I really need to keep, I'm going to say this
on
every episode.
Monday, right?
I'm going to say this on every episode because there's a part of me that suspects that when the 7th comes, you'll say
you're not
ready.
I'm not backing it up. I'm not backing it up on that. I needed a tiny bit more time.
January 7th, the most comprehensive and fucking, what other adjectives could you use to describe
it? It's not comprehensive. Here's why.
It is insanely comprehensive insofar as no one has ever done this shit before. And I'll be goddamned if your false modesty
gets
in the way.
It's not false modesty. It's
this
only.
This is fucking incredible.
It is incredible, but I'm only trying to qualify it in a certain way. And that is to say that the only things that will be covered when we launch this are the things that we know about. And on our show, we haven't covered a great deal of Alex Jones's career. So what I would like it to be is a full compendium of everything Alex Jones. But we haven't covered his entire career. So
did you just Robert Gates me?
No.
There are known knowns, there are known unknowns, and then there's unknown unknowns?
Who are you, Robert Gates?
Oh, no shit.
Rumsfeld, man.
I know, god damn it.
No,
I assumed he was already dead and murdered by a roving band of people who gave a shit about the world.
But there are, unknowns, whether known or unknown unknowns.
Well, yeah, of course.
And so, it would be irresponsible of me to launch into the website and the wiki and all that stuff will cover the information that we are able to cover in a meaningful way. But to say it's comprehensive, I do appreciate that. And I think it's comprehensive to some extent, but I don't want to oversell it and say covered the Boston bombing.
I know
but
you
Alex,
don't.
But Alex's
I know
stuff
you don't.
Is there in that we will, that will be there once we cover it.
I know.
That's what
I
I'm
know.
Saying. That's
Dan?
What I'm saying.
It's frustrating to me that so many fucking...
The caveat needs to be there for the listener.
Look, if
that's
the
all.
Washington Post is behind a paywall, you can go fuck yourself.
That is fair.
Yeah.
That is fair. But the information there will be great, and yeah, that's coming on the 7th. The only reason that I pushed it back is to celebrate the anniversary, which will be Monday, which is when our next episode comes
that's
out.
That's true.
We'll have our anniversary episode. Man, that's a lot of pressure. It'll probably just be 2009. I don't know.
What if we did a clip show?
Let's do it.
Oh, man.
As
you
two
know
people
what?
Who have already on this show said, let's never do a clip show, let's fucking do it.
Like we would do a fucking clip
show. It'll probably be 2009.
Anyway, yeah,
we'll
be back. Would quit.
Thank you all so much for listening. This
yes,
has been
indeed.
Great.
Thank you to all the policy wonks. Enjoy.
I'll say the Dark Overlord is a hack collective or individual. Who knows the precise details of it. I think that they just extort people.
Right.
I don't know if that has ever led anyone to commit suicide for fear of the extortion or anything like that. But I will say that they have never committed the act of murder.
Probably not.
Never actually physically killed anybody.
Or at the very least, probably technically not.
But one guy technically probably has, and that guy is named Alex Jones.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.